Good morning. The Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners will now come to order. It is 9:04 on August 19th, 2022. Can we have a roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey. Robert Charles.
Here.
Mary Coonrod.
Here.
Cedric Davis.
Morning.
Patricia Dobatz.
Here.
Megan Creamer.
Here.
Lynette Hennigan. Diane Palacios.
Here.
Polly Knapp.
Here.
Adelaide Meek.
Here.
Antoine Trotter.
Present.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Patricia Dobratz. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and the board's chairperson. At this time, I'd just like to remind everybody to please turn their cell phones off or into silent mode, please. Throughout the meeting, if you need to use the restroom, they are out those doors outside of and across from the elevators. start all over again. There's also vending machines out in the hall should you need those during the meeting. This is an open meeting and it is being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted to the board's website. As such, we appreciate everyone's assistance in speaking clearly and into the microphones. At this time, I'd like to ask board members and board staff to introduce themselves as well, starting with Mr. Charles.
Robert Charles, public member.
Polly Knapp, professional member.
Antoine Trotter, public member.
Diane Palacios, professional member.
Doc Davis, professional member.
Mary Coonrod, public member.
Diane Kramer, public member.
Annalisa Meek, professional member.
Karen Yabu, deputy director.
Jared Carver, investigations manager.
Toby Zavala, executive director. Thank you, everybody. Our first item of business will be agenda item number 3, which are our minutes for review. 3A are July 8th, 2022 general meeting minutes. My understanding is Ms. Kramer needs to abstain from that. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Davis moves it.
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That'll bring us to agenda item number 4, which is our consent agenda. Items on the consent agenda are listed with a board staff recommendation. Board members have reviewed all of the materials and we're ready to vote on those items as they appear on the agenda, unless somebody wishes to pull the matter. What I mean by pulling the matter is it means you disagree with the recommendation and you'd like to address the board. So I'm going to first go through the cases listed for 4A, which is our cases recommended for dismissal. I'm going to go through each of those to see if there's anybody here who wishes to pull those before we move forward. 4A1, Janet Furman. Is there anybody who wishes to pull that matter? My understanding is 4A2 has already been pulled. 4A3, Drew Pease. 4A4, Kira Wong. 4A5 and 6, Holly Zachary. Alright, is there a motion to dismiss 4A1, 3, 4, 5, and 6?
Davis moves it.
Palacio second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. 4A2, Ms. Gottlieb, I believe you are present, and the complainant's going to be on the phone, correct? Is Ms. Gottlieb present? Ms. Olson?
Hello?
Is Ms. Gottlieb available?
Pardon?
Is Ms. Gottlieb available?
Oh, no, this is Susan Crissell.
I am so sorry. We're off to a great start. This is the board's chairperson, Patricia Dobatz. I apologize. Ms. Purcell, we are getting ready to hear Ms. Gottlieb's matter. And so just since you're not here in the meeting, just to let you know, it is an open meeting, so there are public audience members here. All of the board members and board staff are present, along with Ms. Gottlieb and her attorney, Ms. Olson. And so we'll first hear a brief summary from board staff, and then you'll have a chance to address the board, and then the licensee and her attorney will as well. We have reviewed all the materials in the case, so we ask that you not repeat information that we already have. And if it's necessary to refer to any clients, we ask that you refer to them by initials only, please.
Oh, so wait a minute, I can't say the name of my son.
Correct. We like to protect client confidentiality, so we just ask you to use initials only.
Okay.
Okay, and I would ask that you phone until we're ready to hear from you, and I'm going to ask for board staff to give a brief summary.
Okay, all right, I'll go ahead and mute my phone then.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Oh, I'm sorry, I'll hang on the line. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there does not appear to be clear and convincing evidence to support the complainant's allegations, and that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Ms. Purcell, this would be your time to address the board. You have up to 5 minutes to do so.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Sometimes
we can hear
me okay because sometimes my phone cuts out a little bit.
So far, it's been okay.
All right, thank you. All right. Good morning. I'm Susan Purcell. I'm the mother of THP, and I'm here to discuss the treatment he received during his brief stay at Blue Point Dual Recovery Center, just 7 days, April 9 to April 15, 2021. THP was living in Arizona and we reside in California. Why did we choose Blue Point Dual Recovery Center? We chose the facility because we thought it was a good fit for THP as they advertised a specialized approach to dual diagnosis. THP was diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder severe. From the first day he arrived, he was scared and felt out of place. He ran off the first day. He had no knowledge he ran off until we received a call that evening from THP, using some stranger's phone. After hours of trying to contact Viewpoint, he was finally located and returned. He also left again the next day. It seemed to us THP really needed to see a doctor, which wasn't available until Monday. He had to wait 3 days. The facility agreed to house THP in the Lebanon house. The therapist felt us more of a chill environment. That Wednesday, April 14th, we had a call from the therapist saying THP sounded like a broken record. He was struggling. Well, of course he was struggling. It's a new environment. He was out of his element. We were upset to hear this statement. We too were scared and wanted THP to get the best help available. Hearing these words didn't help the situation, and we questioned the level of care. Did they really care? No. We didn't care because we received another call Thursday, April 15th, and the therapist said THP sounded like a broken record again. This was never explained what sounding like a broken record meant. To us, they sounded like a broken record. This is the only explanation we gave for his behavior. THP said he wanted to check out. As parents, hearing the broken record again was not comforting. Why would a facility who are paying good money to call us and tell us this? This is your livelihood, and at least you could offer some suggestions that perhaps this wasn't a good fit for THP. No, we made sure he checked himself out, your easy way out, to get your phones. You could have cared less about THP. That was apparent the first day. Later in the afternoon, THP was dropped off at Goldwater Lakes under the highway marker 12, 4 miles from town. The facility would not allow him to take any personal items with him, a personal ID. We had a call from the therapist that THP was dropped off downtown. No, that was incorrect information. It was 4 miles from town. Later in the day, we received a call from the deputy who received a request for a welfare check. Now just imagine what we as parents were going through after getting a call from the deputy who had no idea where the son was located. But heck, the therapist did her due diligence by previously calling the deputy to inform him about THP. It was a Friday and we were getting ready to close. I guess we needed to move on to weekend activities. We found this extremely sad on behalf of the facility. So what do we want? Compassion and a better understanding of the client's diagnosis. Please don't call parents and complain to them about how they are behaving. This is unprofessional conduct. We aren't the experts you are. Hearing those words is upsetting, and we didn't question whether you're qualified as a professional to work in this facility. Our complaint is being recommended for dismissal. We recommend that we escalate additional therapist training and handling communication to parents. Your current approach is demeaning and hurtful. We spent $15,000 for 30 days and only received 7 days of marginal care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do board members have any questions for the complainant? Ms. Rosal, I would ask that you mute your phone again.
Yes.
Ms. Gottlieb, Ms. Olson, together you have collectively 5 minutes to address the board now. No, we just press it and then give it a second to turn green. There you go. Thank you.
First and foremost, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to appear and address the board today. I would like to start by expressing my deepest sympathy for the complainant and her family. I've taken this board investigation as an opportunity to take a hard look at my own practice and the practice of Viewpoint Dual Recovery, which I'm employed, and find areas of improvement and continued learning. As a result, I have taken several continuing education courses and have retaken the Arizona statutes and regulations exam to address areas for improvement. Ultimately, however, I do not feel there is any evidence to support the complainant's allegations or that any of my actions weren't disciplined. Her son unfortunately left our facility against medical advice. I am sorry that we did not have the opportunity to work with him and help him address his co-occurring disorders. It is a voluntary facility. We have no means to force a client to stay in treatment. The client's tragic decision to take his life months later was outside of our control. Again, I have very deep sympathy for his family, but I would respectfully request that the board accept the investigator's recommendation and dismiss this complaint. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for that? This is our time to talk amongst ourselves and deliberate, so we ask that you not interrupt. And it's yours to lead.
Ladies and gentlemen, Madam Chair, members of the board, as difficult as the situation is, as difficult as the outcome appears to be, having reviewed the material that was presented, I don't see any option other than moving to dismiss. Unless there's some closing view, I move to dismiss.
Is there a second?
Second. Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. This will conclude this matter. Thank you both for being here. Thank you, Ms. Purcell, for being available. The other phone.
You're welcome.
That will take us to agenda item number 4C. Our case is recommended for release from consent agreements. Unless there's anybody here who wishes to pull C1, John Hinson. C2, Maxwell Jakulski. C3, Michael Medley. C4, Angel Soto. C5, Julie Weiner Gabra. Is there a motion to release from consent agreements C1 through 5?
Davis moves it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll take us to 4D, our case recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Is the professional Ms. Kowalski present? Did you wish to address the board? Ms. Kowalski, this is again on the consent agenda, open a complaint and accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. We'll hear a brief summary from board staff and then we'll give you a chance to address the board.
Madam Chair, this matter is on the consent agenda for the acceptance of a proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Unless you have any questions, that's all I have.
Board members have any questions? Right. Also, you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
No.
Now it is.
My love for helping others stems further than taking a class in college and falling in love with it. To be completely honest, I didn't even know there was a degree for social work. The love for helping others has been there forever. My family would tell stories of me trying to help others when I was 3 or 4 years old. What really made an impact was when my dad started having me come with him to volunteer at a homeless shelter called St. Vincent de Paul. This began when I was in middle school and continued through my first few years of my undergrad. During these years, I got the opportunity to meet people there. One day, a man who was volunteering as well asked me if I knew why he always wore the hat that he had. Of course, I answered that I just thought he liked the hat. He responded, "I want everyone out there to know I'm the same person here, volunteering, as I am the one out there with them." And then I got to dock him, and I found out he was a veteran with a hard story. But he was trying to make a change in his life. He told me how his social worker told him to give up and told him that he had nothing going on for his life. As a young, inexperienced teenager, I tried everything I could do to help him. I left for my freshman year in college to Missouri. When I came back, I went right back to St. Vincent de Paul. As soon as I got there, I went looking for my friend to see how he was doing. He wasn't there. I was cleaning tables and talking to people when I recognized someone, and it was him. He wasn't clean-shaved. He was talking to himself. He didn't recognize anyone around him, nor did he recognize me. He had given up. This whole situation made me realize that I wanted to give people a helping hand, especially when they do not feel like anyone is there for them. I've been working in social work my whole life, but I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the mistake I made. I want you all to remember that when I made this mistake, it was in the midst of a pandemic. During this pandemic, I suddenly lost my father. I say suddenly because he had a heart attack. In the middle of the night, I called the widow's maker. He was the healthiest and happiest 58-year-old man I ever met. For those of you who do not know what the widow maker is, it's a type of heart attack that can take anyone's life in seconds.
Take your time.
Without any signs, the moon underneath to your heart slowly walks, making it impossible to notice unless you're seeing courageous. With this happening, I paid off my apartment 6 months early and went back home to help my mom. 2 months prior, she's losing my dad, she had lost both of her jobs. So I went back home to support her and help her. Because of the fear of COVID, we weren't able to have a funeral. Not until September when things opened up. With moving back, I still was working at Child Family Social Services as it became closer to starting my first year at AOC's Master Program for Social Work. I explained my job, I will have to go part-time in order to really be there for my clients and focus on school. My job stay wasn't an option, and they let go. School began a few weeks later, and family started coming in for the funeral. Everyone came and told my mom and I, and if we needed anything, they're here. But at the end of the day, everyone knows when you lose someone, there's nothing anyone can say or do that will help with that loss. After the funeral, people left, but the pain didn't go. I drank only counseling, but it didn't help. I found a psychiatrist to help my grief, and my depression was beginning to take over. I was originally diagnosed with major depression in 2016, and I was taking medication for it, but after losing my dad, nothing could help. I was placed on new medication and trying to find ways to make it through the day. The night of my mistake took place in Tempe on December 13th. I went to meet a friend at a sports bar to watch the Suns game. This was the first time I actually felt comfortable enough to leave my mom alone and go out and for a night to enjoy being a 24-year-old. I had a couple drinks and lost track of time. I was finally able to put aside the pain and began to feel like myself. I was just after 12 a.m. and I told my friend I needed to go home to my mom. I left the bar, and a few minutes after driving, I was pulled over for speeding. Pretty soon after, I was arrested and being charged with a DUI. It was a mistake that I'll forever live. I was not thinking. I was paying attention to finally feeling okay again, to feeling normal again, and to not worrying. I do not believe this mistake is going to be going unwarned. I feel as though
I have a better understanding of what people I work with may be going through and how to help them work through situations and how to find happiness in the dark. I hope that you all understand where I'm coming from and I'm willing to see this situation as a mistake. I'm in the pain. But rather than wallowing in it, I decided to come today and fight for what I know I was born to do. Fight for everyone to see that I'm here to make a difference in this world. And fight for what my dad knew I was going to do. I know that you all see this was a mistake, but I am taking it as a lesson to help those around me. I really appreciate you all willing to listen to me, and I understand whatever consequence does come with it. I'm willing to do whatever it is to get my license so that I can believe in those who don't believe in themselves to be that helping hand when we need. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you board members have any questions for the applicant? This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Yep, I believe this is yours to lead, and again, it was on the agenda to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement.
Yes, and after reviewing the material, I would move that we do open the complaint and accept the proposed non-disciplinary consent agreement. And after hearing you speak a little bit, I just want to encourage you to try to keep going and practicing. So if we can help support you in any way. So I just motion to open the complaint and accept the proposed non-disciplinary consent agreement.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We accepted the non-disciplinary consent agreement. Staff will be following up with you. Best of luck to you, okay? Thank you. Take us to 4D, our case recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Is the professional Ms. Kowalski present? Did you wish to address the board? Kowalski, this is, again, on the consent agenda, open a complaint and accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. We'll hear a brief summary from board staff, and then we'll give you a chance to address the board.
Madam Chair, this matter is on the consent agenda for the acceptance of a proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Unless you have any questions, that's all I have.
Board members have any questions? Okay. Kowalski, you would have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
No.
Now it is.
My love for helping others stems further than taking a class in college and falling in love with it. To be completely honest, I didn't even know there was a degree for social work. The love for helping others has been there forever. My family would tell stories of me trying to help others when I was 3 or 4 years old. What really made an impact was when my dad started having me come with him to volunteer at a homeless shelter called St. Vincent de Paul. This began when I was in middle school and continued through my first few years of my undergrad. During these years, I got the opportunity to meet people there. One day, a man who was volunteering as well asked me if I knew why he always wore the hat that he had. Of course, I answered that I just thought he liked the hat. He responded, "I want everyone out there to know I'm the same person in here volunteering as I am the one out there with them." And then I got to talk to him and I found out he was a veteran with a hard story. But he was trying to make a change in his life. He told me how his social worker told him to give up and told him that he had nothing going on for his life. As a young, inexperienced teenager, I tried everything I could do to help him. I left for my freshman year in college to Missouri. When I came back, I went right back to St. Vincent de Paul. As soon as I got there, I went looking for my friend to see how he was doing. He wasn't there. I was cleaning tables and talking to people when I recognized someone, and it was him. He wasn't clean-shaved. He was talking to himself. He didn't recognize anyone around him, nor did he recognize me. He had given up. This whole situation made me realize that I wanted to give people a helping hand, especially when they do not feel like anyone is there for them.
I've been working in social work my whole life, but I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the mistake I made. I want you all to remember that when I made this mistake, it was in the midst of a pandemic. During this pandemic, I suddenly lost my father. I say suddenly because he had a heart attack. I knew him and I had called the widow's maker. He was the healthiest and happiest 58-year-old man I ever met. For those of you who do not know what the widow maker is, it's a type of heart attack that can take anyone's life in seconds.
Take your time.
Without any signs, then you are going to your heart's holy blocks, making it impossible to notice unless you're seeing a cardiologist. With this happening, I paid off my apartment 6 months early and moved back home to help my mom. 2 months prior, she's losing my dad, she had lost both of her jobs. So I went back home to support her and help her. Because of the fear of COVID, we weren't able to have a funeral. Not until September when things opened up. With moving back, I still was working at Child Family Social Services as I became closer to starting my first year at ASU's Master Program for Social Work. I explained my job, I don't have to go part-time in order to really be there for my clients and focus on school. When my job stayed, that wasn't an option. School began a few weeks later, and family started coming in for the funeral. Everyone came and told my mom and I that if we needed anything, they're here. But at the end of the day, everyone knows when you lose someone, there's nothing anyone can say or do that will help with that loss. After the funeral, people left, but the pain didn't go. I tried going to counseling, but it didn't help. I found a psychiatrist to help with my grief, and my depression was beginning to take over. I was originally diagnosed with major depression in 2016, and I was taking medication for it, but after losing my dad, nothing could help. I was placed on new medication and trying to find ways to make it through the day. The minimum mistake took place in Tempe on December 13th. I went to meet a friend at a sports bar to watch the Suns game. This was the first time I actually felt comfortable enough to leave my mom alone and go out and for a night to enjoy being a 24-year-old. I had a couple drinks and lost track of time. I was finally able to put aside the pain and began to feel like myself. Almost exactly 12 a.m., and I told my friend I needed to go home to my mom. I left the bar, and a few minutes after driving, I was pulled over for speeding. Pretty soon after, I was arrested and being charged with a DUI. It was a mistake that I'll forever live. I was not thinking. I was paying attention to finally feeling okay again, to feeling normal again, and to not worrying. I do not believe this mistake is going to be going unwarned. I feel as though I have a better understanding of what people I work with may be going through and how to help them with their situations and how to find happiness in the dark. I hope that you all understand where I'm coming from and I'm willing to see this situation as a mistake. I'm in a pain. But rather than wallowing in it, I decided to come today and fight for what I know I was born to do. Fight for everyone to see that I'm here to make a difference in this world. And fight for what my dad knew I was going to do. I hope that you all see this was a mistake, but I am taking it as a lesson to help those around me. I really appreciate you all willing to listen to me, and I understand whatever consequence does come with it. I'm willing to do whatever it is to get my license so that I can believe in those who don't believe in themselves, to be that helping hand when we need. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you board members have any questions for the applicant? This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. No, I believe this is yours to lead. And again, it was on the agenda to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement.
Yes, and after reviewing the material, I would move that we do open the complaint and accept the proposed non-disciplinary consent agreement. And after hearing you speak a little bit, I just want to encourage you to try to keep going in that direction and keep speaking and hold it on that you've been doing that. There's another attorney. So if we can help support you in any way. So I just motion to open the complaint and accept the proposed non-disciplinary consent agreement.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We accepted the non-disciplinary consent agreement. Thanks, Deputy. Following up with you. Best of luck to you, okay? Thank you. To 4E, which is our cases recommended for opening a complaint and accepting the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement, is the licensee for E1, Ms. Aguilar, present. Did you wish to address the board?
I don't.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there a motion to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement for Ms. Aguilar?
So moved.
Kramer.
Make second.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Kunal.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Pauline Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Zanik.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Aguilar. This will conclude your matter. For 4E2, Ms. Winery, are you present? All right. Is there a motion to open a complaint and accept the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement for E2?
So moved.
Kramer.
Knapp, second.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Kunal.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobratz.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Pauline Knapp.
Aye.
Adelaide Zanik.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. My understanding, Ms. Zavala, 4F, Ms. Crockett is going to be tabled. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And 4G, Ms. Martin-Doring, recommended for acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. Is the licensee present? All right. Thank you both. Is there a motion to accept the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement?
Davis moves it.
Palacio, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you both. And that will conclude our consent agenda. Move on to agenda item number 7, which are complaints and disciplinary matters. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's review of disciplinary matters. It will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to us in ARS 323281. Please be aware that we've read all the material submitted during the course of the meeting. If it's necessary to refer to clients, please use initials only, including if this includes the complainant. Those licensees or applicants on today's agenda received by mail a board meeting notice, which included a list of potential actions the board could take once we reach the deliberations phase. This list is not exclusive, and there may be other options the board considers. The board will first hear a brief summary from board staff. Once staff is done, other interested parties, including the complainant, if applicable, and the professional, will be given an opportunity to address the board. In order to give everyone the same opportunity, we ask that those speaking not take time repeating information that the board has already received. You and your legal counsel, if applicable, collectively will be given time to address the board equal to the time it took board staff to present its case, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. The board does have a civility policy, which prohibits the use of any type of disorderly conduct. Anybody violating this policy will be asked to leave the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussions with the parties, we'll move into our deliberations. We ask during that time that you not interrupt. And we'll first go to 7C. C and D, Mr. Perry. And let's see, we have... 7D, or 7C first. Is the complainant, Ms. Pike, present for that? Any of the complainants for 7D present? Mr. Noperi. Correct. And Ms. McClellan, you are here on behalf of Mr. Noperi as well.
Yes, I am.
All right. So we'll first hear a brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ALS 3232516Q, failing or refusing to maintain adequate records of behavioral health services provided to a client. This recommendation is based on the following. From 218 to 921, licensee was employed at agency as a therapist providing direct behavioral health services to clients. In 9 of 21, agency's QM conducted an audit and found discrepancies between duration of sessions, licensee documented, and records from licensee's phone logs. On 9/21/21, agency decided to terminate licensee due to the inaccurate documentation. Agency provided several tables and spreadsheets showing at least four occasions where the time documented in the notes were much greater than the time within the phone logs for those days. Agency only conducted an audit for a one-week time frame due to the numbers of staff being audited and the resources available to complete an audit. Agency indicated this pattern seen with the audit of the one-week period was a similar trend seen among licensees' progress notes outside this one-week time frame, but was not included in the formal audit report to maintain consistency across all staff. Examples included the following. On 8/31/21, licensee documented a 120-minute session according to the note, but only an 80-minute phone call from his work issue phone occurred on this date. On 9/1/21, licensee documented a 60-minute session, but only 22 minutes were counted for according to the phone records. On 9/2/21, licensee documented a 60-minute session, but only 27 minutes were accounted for according to the phone records. Licensee represented the following throughout board staff's investigation. Licensee encountered connectivity issues with the virtual platform at times and would use his personal cell phone to continue or finish a session. An agency never provided trainings on how to transition from one platform to another, such as virtual to telephonic. Licensee may have started a session via phone, then finished it in person because the client was on their way to the office. Licensee may have used the cell phone provided by agency, but switched to his personal cell phone if he had connection issues with the work cell phone. This could be why the phone log agencies provided do not align, because they did not have his personal cell phone records. Licensee now understands the importance of creating a new note if the mode of session switches while providing a service. Agency did not bill per session, and clients were simply provided therapy services through the program they were enrolled in. Licensee would not have had a financial gain by inflating his times in the progress notes. Complainant was not aware that licensee may have been using his personal cell phone at the time they terminated licensee's employment. Furthermore, it is concerning that the licensee represented to the agency that he was more focused on client care and not as much on documentation and could not provide a clear reason for documentation discrepancies, but during an investigative interview with board staff, licensee changed his representation. Licensee indicated to board staff that he may have switched the mode of session or switched to his personal cell phone to complete a session due to technical difficulties, which is why there were discrepancies in the duration of notes and the duration of phone calls on his work phone records. Additionally, had agency conducted a more thorough audit of all licensee's progress note times and call logs, there would have been a much greater number of discrepancies seen over a longer period of time. Ultimately, licensee was terminated for inaccurate documentation. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Lara. Do board members have any questions? All right. You now have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning. Thank you for your time. So Mr. Noperi was employed by this employer, OPCS, for a long period of time before this occurred. And it's important to note he had never disciplined, never a negative review. Just about 3 months before this happened, they actually gave him a raise for his performance. What happened is he was called into a room, and a phone log or a spreadsheet essentially was set in front of him. And they said, this log doesn't match your notes. And Mr. Noperi was essentially in shock. He was getting fired, and he kept asking, what does this phone log represent? I don't understand what you're accusing me of. He couldn't give a good explanation because he didn't understand what the phone log put in front of him represented. It was raised to the attention of his employer that there were issues with the telehealth. This all happened during COVID, when strict COVID protocols were put in place. All therapists were scrambling, as we all know, trying to grapple with how to transition to telehealth, how to document telehealth. And he expressed those concerns to his supervisors. We submitted a letter from a coworker who verified that there were discussions that the platforms they were being asked to use, their clients either couldn't use them, didn't want to use them, or struggling with them. He was handed a bag of flip phones to give clients to connect through telehealth, but that doesn't work for your platforms like a Zoom or a Teams meeting. And he was never told he couldn't use his personal cell phone. And when he did, he always blocked his number so that there wasn't a boundaries issue here. They would never have his personal cell phone number. But he was focused on making sure he could carry out the session he was supposed to have with the clients. And if they were having trouble with their phone or his phone, they made arrangements that the client would say, I'm coming in, I don't like this, I want to see what's your face. And so they would show up the office. He has recognized that at that point he didn't understand the documentation he should have done. And he knows in hindsight to correct that, either start a new note saying we're now switching to in-session, or clearly document we had to go from my work phone to my personal phone, or whatever had to happen. But we'd ask that you take into consideration the time frame that this was all happening. And the time he logged in those notes were time he spent with clients. And the support letters we provided to you, including from his current employer, support that he's not the type of person who is exaggerating the length of sessions, and he would have no motivation to do that since he's not paid based on the length of those sessions. He's also done several hours, more than 8 hours, of CEUs on record keeping and documentation to ensure this doesn't happen again in the future. And so we'd ask that you take into consideration that phone log is not an accurate representation of what happened, and that this doesn't rise to the level of unprofessional conduct. He was already terminated from his job, which is a pretty big consequence as it is. So we'd ask that you dismiss this complaint. Thank you. Do board members have any questions for the licensee?
Madam Chair, may I just add something to that?
Yeah.
In all respect to COVID, I recognize that it was a hardship for many people. I just want to make it clear that this was a year and 6 months after the onset of COVID. I mean, technically, we're still in COVID, so I want to make that note. And the other thing I think that's important, too, is that board staff did not use the violation for fraud. We used the violation for failure to maintain based on the lack of documentation. That's all I have.
Thank you, Spa. And that was going to be my clarification. We're talking about August 2021 and September 2021. Is it common practice for you to schedule two-hour sessions?
It was for that line of work. We did the behavioral health assessment and the intake paperwork, so sometimes it was 4 hours that I had to do. I know it was a while since we were in the pandemic, and we still haven't figured out what platform to use, and the different platforms that we use, we'll switch from Zoom to Teams because Teams was free, and it was really tough, and the clients didn't want to, and they were, a lot of them were court order clients, and they would call me, I'm on my way, can we talk about things, and then they would, I didn't know what, you know, a lot of times that they would tell me I'm in my car, nobody's here, things like that. I would check in on them. And then when they get there, say, okay, I'm walking in now. I'm going to talk to you. And so I would continue with that. I realize now what, you know, the board is saying, you know, document in the note that you're switching. And it was kind of for me juggling those things around.
Thank you. This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. And at this time, we're still just looking at 7C. Ms. Blasius, I believe you have any questions.
Thank you for being here with us today, Mr. Napoli, and also your initiative for taking additional CEUs. Just grateful for your initiative with that. So, members of the board, I'm looking at offering a consent agreement for 24-month probation.
First need to decide whether or not I'm in violation.
find the violations first, and then since there's another case, we can hold up on.
Okay.
Do you want to address the violations first?
Yes, I would like to find violation.
Second.
So ARS 3232516Q, and that's your motion. And yes. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
You're opposed? Sorry. I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Didn't mean to shock
you. No, that's okay. Okay, so let me just take that vote again. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Mr. Davis, motion carries. So we will hold off on discipline and hear 7D before moving forward, correct, Ms. Lowe?
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation: ARS 3232516S, terminating behavioral health services to a client without making an appropriate referral for continuation of care for the client if continuing behavioral health services are indicated. This recommendation is based on the following: from 10/4/21 to 10/21/21, licensee was employed as agency as a counselor. On 10/5/21 and 10/12/21, licensee participated in group supervision sessions. On 10/21/21, licensee emailed his resignation effective immediately, indicating his reason for leaving is for financial reasons, which is why he could not provide more notice of his resignation. Complainant represents at least 4 clients were transferred to licensee, and 4 more clients were aware licensee would be their therapist at some point. The supervision notes indicated at least 2 separate clients that would be transitioned to licensee. A 10/12/21 email from agency to licensee named 7 clients that would be transferred to licensee. Licensee's personnel records included a resignation policy indicating a 30-day notice of resignation was required, but it did not include licensee's signatures or place for licensee's signature. Licensee represented he was not aware of the agency had a 30-day notice of resignation policy, and part of the reason he resigned was due to an uncomfortable work environment. Licensee represented the following: licensee was not at agency long and was completing various trainings and did not have computer access for the first week. Licensee was told via email there would be several clients he needed to outreach to engage in services. Licensee never provided therapy services to any clients, but rather made outreach attempts to some clients. Licensee was not aware of any clients officially being assigned to him. Since the filing of this complaint, licensee has learned it was not the best to leave agency the way he did, and he would give at least a 2-week notice moving forward when leaving employment. Despite agency emailing licensee a list of several clients that would be transitioned to him, there does not appear to be evidence that licensee established and built a therapeutic rapport with agency clients. It is concerning that licensee resigned from a behavioral health position without adequate notice. Licensee represented to agency that he was resigning for financial reasons, yet his representation during an investigation with board staff was it was not a good working environment, changing his reason for departing agency. Even more concerning that licensee resigned effective immediately but did not start working at Sierra Tucson for more than 2 weeks later, meaning licensee could have in fact provided adequate notice of his resignation. And that's all I have, unless you have questions for me.
Are there any questions from board members? All right. We have up to 5 minutes to address the question.
Thank you. So this was Mr. Naperi's employment immediately after the shocking termination from OPUCS, I believe. And I want to highlight something that Ms. Bala just said, which is there was no evidence that he actually established any relationships with any of these clients or that those clients believed him to be their therapist. In the 2 weeks that he was there, when Nikki didn't have email access or a computer, he was shadowing along with other therapists in these group sessions. And Mr. Nupari has represented that in those sessions, no one made a representation that he was the therapist. There was a client that he saw who he had a conversation with. He said, I don't know that I'll be your therapist or not. That's something that's going to be followed up in the future. So there was never a representation to his knowledge or that CLS ever provided any information to the board during this investigation that any clients believed that they were abandoned or that he was the their therapist or that they would be seeing him again in the future. These were pre-existing clients of this agency who did see different therapists at different times. Some of the clients he was given on that list hadn't come in for a long time, so his task was simply to reach out and encourage them to call back to the facility if they wanted to re-engage. And so the allegation that he didn't make an appropriate referral, these were already clients of the agency, not him. And understandably, he has admitted in the future he will find out if there's a policy for how long to stay. He will make sure that he gives notice and time for that. In his defense, CLS never raised any issue with that. They never said, we need you to stay longer because we have already transitioned clients to you, that we feel that these clients have established a relationship. And he has been very clear, if they had asked him to do that, he would. He did give them the financial reason as his for leaving, but it was not a good work environment for him, and he didn't feel comfortable having that discussion. And he'll admit, too, in hindsight, he's going to have that hard discussion with employers so that there's no misconception about why he's left his employment. But Mr. McCurry is not the type of person who would abandon the client if he felt that there was an established relationship. He recognizes he can improve in that in the future, but these were not his personal clients. They had other therapists available that were already providing services to them through the group sessions and had not established relationships. So we ask again that you find no violation on this matter. You did find a violation on the prior matter. Again, we submitted a letter from his current supervisor showing that he gets awards and he does establish great relationships with his clients. He has a very supportive employer who says he's an exemplary employee, nothing but rave reviews. And so we ask that you also take that into consideration, that this is not indicative of who he is as a therapist to warrant discipline in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you board members have any questions? Any questions? So we have time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. Officers. So
I would like to propose that we find violation for this and combine.
Any discussion about the violations?
I don't know about this second one. I don't know if it comes to the degree. Since there's no evidence of the licensing seeing the 30-day policy from the former employer, since there's really no harm, in my opinion, just looking at it from the outside in, I don't see enough direct harm to clients. I don't see that building of a relationship. So I don't know if I agree with this or to the extent of finding for the violation. The first matter is different. This matter is, to me, is a little bit more gray, and so I respectfully don't believe we should find for the violation on this particular matter.
I agree with that as well. It seems like there's no clear and convincing evidence that there were relationships established with any of these individuals, that somehow there was a belief somewhere that had been assigned to him. So I'm kind of in agreement.
And the time frame strikes me on this as well. I think we've all, it looks like about 3 weeks maybe, where he employed at this organization. We all know there's HR and onboarding, right, and shadowing and things we've talked about. So to have had a full client load that he could have been able to abandon, would have been fast. Right? That would have been a short period of time to have established those folks.
I do think along with that, though, if it had taken that next step, it's also that initial engagement, and then to have to tell clients, oh, never mind, you're getting this step. So I do think, like, the timing, like you said, but it's the fact that that next step in terms of the actual engagement and scheduling for me is why I would teeter, and I'd be looking at probably non-disciplinary, but address education and such.
Madam Chair and members of the board, I agree with the tradition, as it were, of
giving at least 2 weeks' notice and to resign immediately as a licensed person. I probably wouldn't do that. I don't remember ever having done that. But I can understand how somebody might decide to do that, especially if that professional doesn't feel a real connection to any clients. I don't think it rises to a level of discipline in this case.
It's back to you.
Yeah, so after hearing all of members of the board, I am in agreement with your recommendation to not find violation.
So it would be a different thing.
Correct.
Did you want to do a dismissing with a letter of concern or just a flat-out dismissal?
I like the letter of concern idea because I think also what you're saying is valid as well. You know, that intro, starting that connection, and then also, you know, what you were saying too about, you know, as a licensed professional, generally I wouldn't you know, leave that letter either. So I think the letter of concern might be
good. And it depends on what we would have done if it came as a
Yeah.
I like to
memorialize the behavior since it is different than the other.
Yeah.
I would agree. And I think at first, because I saw two different complaints, that was my original recommendation. But after discussion, I would agree. But, I'd like to make a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern.
Make a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So we will go back to 7C regarding the violations that were found. And any proposal in terms of moving forward with...
I'd like to propose to offer a consent agreement, 24 hours probation.
Months.
I'm sorry, months probation.
I would agree with 24 hours.
24 hours. 24 months probation. To have some clinical supervision regarding documentation, the ACA Code of Ethics, board statutes and rule, a 6-hour course of staying out of trouble, a 6-hour CE ethics course, and with the supervision piece, proposing that meeting twice a month for the first year, second year potentially once a month, but also if clinical supervisor is in agreement to potentially have an early release from consent agreement after 12 months, not hours.
Questions, thoughts? You said 6 hours documentation, 6 hours effort?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, the documentation address documentation with electronic means and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess I don't see the need. I think it's a little bit too punitive to my thinking. What's the reasoning for the supervision? I mean, is it still the documentation piece?
Yeah, to review code of ethics.
Well, you also have somebody who used a personal cell phone.
No, understand.
I mean, I think there were layers that could be addressed in clinical supervision.
So do you think ethics is needed as well then with that, or do you think the supervision will take care of that with the CEUs for documentation?
He has taken an ethics course in March 2022.
But is ethics, well, I mean, so the phone for the documentation because of communication. So do you think all three of those, I guess, are needed to take care of the problem. I feel like 2 to 3 might suffice.
Are you thinking the ethics and the supervision?
I mean, I'm all right with the ethics and supervision. If we feel like those are the better courses, the higher level courses to kind of, you know.
Yeah, I think that the ethics would be helpful, you know, because your ethics class might tie a couple of loose ends, right? The documentation definitely is needed.
Sure.
And then, in addition to that, the supervision, right, to kind of stay on the adequate path. So the staying out of trouble, I'm not sure that that might necessarily help.
I wonder, since he has preemptively taken, taken the ethics course, I wonder if we could consider that and accept that. Documentation course.
And supervision?
Yeah. Especially if code of ethics is being addressed in supervision, and previously there has been some CEUs audits taken regarding ethics.
I like the idea with maybe being targeted with the supervision and what the supervision is to go over, and maybe doing one last, so documentation, maybe supervision, and like you said, addressing the code of ethics and any other concerns that the board may have. I think that might suffice. Yeah. My humble opinion.
Which we usually do that anyway, right? Provide guidance for what is going to be covered in the supervision?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I currently have the focus as documentation, code of ethics, behavior health ethics, as well as board statutes and rules.
And I would add telehealth.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And health services and, I guess,
so just to clarify, though, we went back, I just want to make sure the CEUs, no CEUs, or just the one CEUs?
Documentation.
Just the one. So the 6 for documentation. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean to interrupt. Would he be able, he did 6. Are you considering giving credit for the 6 he submitted or not?
In regards to the documentation?
Yeah, he did the 6 hours record keeping.
I think, Madam Chair, members of the board, I think that's something that you can consider. What we can do is we can require the 6 CEUs of documentation, but allow him to submit anything he's taken since the complaint, and that would basically also include that he wouldn't be able to use that towards his renewal.
And the board doesn't need to review it.
Correct, to make sure that it meets. All right, so let me, so we'd be offering a consent agreement for 24 months. He'd be required to get clinical supervision at a minimum of 2 monthly. After 1 year of clinical supervision, the clinical supervisor can request release to that supervision or a lesser amount of time for the remaining 12 months. The focus would be on telehealth, documentation, code of ethics, behavior health ethics, board statutes and rules. He would also be required to take 6 CEUs of documentation and can submit any documentation courses he's taken since the onset of the complaint that can be considered. And if not signed, he would be asked to come to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
Yes, that would.
I wonder if the full 24 months is necessary. I wonder if there would be a way for him to be released after 12 months.
That's what I had mentioned. At 12 months, upon the clinical supervisor's recommendation, he could be request release.
Yeah. Or to a lesser, 1 month instead of 2 a month.
Correct.
For supervision.
Yeah, to be sure that he could be released.
Correct. There's that option.
Is that your motion, Mr. Paul?
Yes, that is my motion.
Second Trotter.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobatz.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Creamer.
Aye.
Adelaide Zanik.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you both for being here. Best of luck to you.
All right, we're going to come back to order. It's 10:10. All right, we will go to 7H. Ms. Welch, are you present? We're first going to hear a brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16CI, making any oral or written misrepresentation of a fact to secure or attempt to secure the issuance or renewal of a license. This recommendation is based on the following. On 3-8-22, licensee submitted her LAC renewal with the board. Every Friday, board staff randomly audits 6 renewal applications from the previous week, and on 3-16-22, licensee was randomly selected for an audit. On 5-11-22, licensee emailed board staff her CEU tracker along with the certificates of completion. In review of the CEU tracker, licensee indicated she completed the Arizona Statutes Regulations tutorial on 12-7-21, but did not include the completion certificate. Board staff contacted licensee, and licensee represented that she thought she had completed the tutorial, but could only locate the 2018 completion certificate. Licensee provided the following representation with her written response to the board complaint. It was an oversight of not completing the tutorial, and it was unintentional. After being notified, licensee went and completed the tutorial on 5-24-22. Licensee is unsure where the 12-7 date came from. Licensee represented the following in part during an investigative interview. Licensee is aware that the tutorial needs to be completed each renewal and thought she had in fact completed it. Licensee is unsure where the 12-7-21 date came from and assumes she may have put it since she planned on taking the tutorial that day, which was a huge oversight. Licensee double-checked the CEU tracker to ensure the hours and certificates match. Licensee could not locate the tutorial completion certificate and assumed board staff would have record of it since it was completed through the board's website. Licensee would never have done anything like this intentionally. On 3-8-22, licensee signed an affidavit with her renewal application indicating certifying the information with her renewal application was true and accurate and that the information she completed required 30 hours of continuing education. It is highly concerning that licensee represents she double-checked her completion certificates and assumed board staff would have possession of her completion certificate for the tutorial. Rather than logging into CCE to locate the completion certificate of the tutorial, licensee simply indicated on her renewal application that she completed the tutorial without proof of completion. Furthermore, licensees listed a specific date of completion for the tutorial without any actual completion certificate to corroborate the date. Licensee misrepresented the facts on her renewal application by indicating she completed the Arizona Statutes Regulations tutorial with, in fact, completing it as documented on the CEU tracker. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? All right. Ms. Holt, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board now.
Thank you. All I have to say is, again, I definitely wouldn't have submitted the renewal intentionally to like misrepresent anything, and the past I've always have the certificates done, and it was just a complete oversight. I feel terrible about it, and definitely never happen again in the future. I'm going to definitely check over and over again, and then have supervisors check for me as well to make sure I have everything done and I'm not missing anything and everything is there before submitting for another renewal. And I'm also here with two supervisors. I don't know if they would be able to also speak as well.
I think only if they can speak to the complaint, which is the concern about the tutorial. I'm not sure that they could speak to anything that the board would be considering with that. Board members feel otherwise. Anything else that you'd want to add, Ms. Welch?
Just that I'm really sorry for the situation, and again, it was not intentional, and definitely never happen ever again in the future.
Any questions? All right, this will be our time to deliberate. We ask that you not interrupt. Dr. Gregory leading this discussion.
because the board has for decades discovered that licensees attest that they were not aware of the rules and laws associated with their licenses. The board responded to the requests of members of the board for the creation and deployment of a tutorial that, when taken, would ensure that licensees are informed of the laws and rules that govern their licensure in Arizona. By requiring that licensees taken past the tutorial at the time of initial licensure and renewal of licenses, the completion of the updated tutorial is designed to ensure that licensees have the most current information about the rules associated with their licensure. The board has historically used an honor system for the verification of completion of continuing education credits as required for license renewal. The process of selecting attestations for audit is a check and balance designed to ensure that representations of credits completed are accurate. It's always disheartening when it's discovered that a licensee has taken advantage of the honor system. Before I offer a motion, I want to give my colleagues opportunities to speak to the situation and offer your opinions.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think, you know, obviously it was probably an honest mistake. However, she should have done her due diligence and verified her information. If she couldn't find a certificate, she shouldn't have relied on someone else. So whether it's an honest mistake or not, she didn't complete it, she said she did.
I think for me it's the layers of it that make it hard to believe that it was just a mistake. So it's A, listing it with a date without the completion in front of you, so you're literally actively doing something without it. And then you get audited and you submit everything else, so you're actively submitting everything else without it. And then, so to me it was kind of those layers that even more concerning than just it being.
And although I drafted it so that I wouldn't mess up my words, we worked very, very hard. We argued and really implored the board to create the tutorial. And the board did. The board staff did. So it's there for a great positive purpose. And the honor system, if we don't have that, if we don't respect the honor system. Yes. I think the board is at this time forced by the unprofessional behavior of the licensee to fine for a violation of Arizona Revised Statute 3232.51.16c(i), making any oral or written misrepresentation of a fact to secure or attempt to secure the issuance or renewal of a license, and I move this finding.
One second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. How would you see definitely?
Well, I offer this to my colleagues. The licensee should be offered a consent agreement stipulating that the license will be placed on probation for 12 months. The licensee will be ordered to complete a 3-credit-hour graduate level course in behavioral health ethics, and upon successful completion of the course and presentation of the certificate of completion, the licensee may request release from the consent agreement. Before I move it, I'll offer my colleagues an opportunity to consider this offer. This offer.
Yep. Can we add to that, if not signed, invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remand to a formal hearing?
That's my motion.
Second, Trotter.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonan.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobutz.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelisa Meek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you for being here, Ms. Welch. We will go to 7G. Ms. Welborn? Ms. Welborn present? All right. A brief summary from board staff.
Madam Chair and members of the board, an applicant for licensure must meet the requirements of ARS 32-3275, which includes the following. A6, not have committed any act or engaged in any conduct that would constitute grounds for disciplinary action against a licensee pursuant to this chapter. Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. Sexual relationships with a client, ARS 32-3251-16V, engaging in any sexual conduct between a licensee and a client or former client. This recommendation is based on the following. On 4-7-22, applicant submitted her LCSW application by endorsement. Applicant answered yes to two of the background questions within the questionnaire regarding previous complaints or actions against a professional license or certificate. Applicant provided a 4-1-22 letter with the following explanation. In December 2008, applicant began working at a VA medical center. In January 2009, applicant was co-facilitating groups and client was assigned to applicant's co-worker, and applicant was not his therapist. After client completed residential treatment, he was hired at the VA as an employee and asked applicant out on a date. Applicant checked the NASW Code of Ethics and asked co-workers about the issue, and applicant married the client a short time later. Applicant believed that since client was not her current client, it did not constitute a violation of her Code of Ethics. As applicant progressed in her career, she realized that although she did not provide direct care to client, she still violated ethical boundaries and self-reported this ethical violation to Wyoming. Wyoming found applicant guilty of ethical violations since she had a dual relationship with client, which included a sexual relationship. In November 2018, applicant was denied a license in Colorado due to the Wyoming disciplinary action. Furthermore, in a 6-20-22 email to board staff, applicant represented that client was not her direct client, but rather a client of a group she co-facilitated. An 11-28-18 NPDB report from Colorado indicated a denial of license due to sexual misconduct with a Wyoming client. A 6-4-13 settlement agreement with Wyoming included the following in part. From August 2008 to January 2010, applicant was employed with the VA, and from January 2009 to April 2009, client was engaging in residential treatment and outpatient services with the VA. Applicant co-facilitated and authored group counseling notes for 43 group sessions and two additional outpatient sessions for client. 2 months after providing direct behavioral health services to client, applicant married client despite being a former client. Over 2 years after marrying client, applicant then self-reported this prohibited relationship with client to Wyoming. Applicant was found in violation of Wyoming rules regarding ethical standards and romantic and sexual intimacies with a client or former client. Applicant was also found in violation of the NASW Code of Ethics Section 1.09, sexual relationships which prohibit sexual contact with former clients. Despite applicant engaging in a sexually inappropriate relationship with a former client 2 months after services terminated and eventually marrying this former client, Wyoming granted applicant an LCSW license pending the completion of various education stipulations. It's highly concerning that applicant appears to minimize her inappropriate sexual relationship by representing she was not client's direct therapist, but rather co-facilitated the groups. Furthermore, applicant represents she reviewed the NASW Code of Ethics and consulted with other colleagues before marrying client. The NASW Code of Ethics clearly outlines that social workers should not engage in sexual activities or contact with former clients because of the potential for harm to the client. Applicant inappropriately engaged in a sexual relationship with a former client violating ethical boundaries. And that is all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Carver. Any questions from board members?
Manager, for the record, can we just note that prior to this case being heard, Ms. Mona Baskin, the board's legal advisor, joined our meeting.
Thank you so much. Ms. Snapp, I believe this is yours to leave the discussion.
Yes, thank you. So after reviewing all the evidence, it seems quite clear that there appears to be clear and convincing evidence that she submitted on the application to support violation of ARS 32325116B, engaging in any sexual conduct between a licensee, a client, or former client, and then that would lead to her not being eligible to meet the requirements for licensure in the state of Arizona pursuant to ARS 32-3275-A6. So, I move to open a complaint based on the information provided by the applicant. I move to make a finding on that complaint of unprofessional conduct pursuant to ARS 32-3275-A6. And then I move to deny the application.
We'll take them in two separate questions.
Two separate. Double.
Okay, sorry, thank you.
Violation is perfect.
Okay, then we'll stop there.
All right, so there's a motion to open the complaint and fine for violation. Is there a second?
One second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And your second motion?
And then I'm going to make a second motion to move to deny the application based on ARS 32-3275A Part 6.
Make a second. Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobutz.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Sameek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
To 7A, Ms. Fredrickson is the professional here. Will come forward, and I believe the complainant is that correct? Mr. Glade is not present, correct? Want to try one more time? Want to proceed?
Madam Chair, we do have the number. We verify that it's the correct number.
All right, and he knew we'd be calling this morning.
That is correct.
All right, we will proceed. Record will reflect. We attempted to call the complainant twice around 10:28 a.m., and so we're going to move forward. We'll first hear a brief summary from board staff. Any member of board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16M, engaging or offering to engage as a licensee in activities that are not congruent with the licensee's professional education, training, or experience. This recommendation is based on the following. In the year of 2020, licensee has been providing behavioral health services to client. A 3-10-20 treatment plan for client indicated the goal of therapy is increasing positive coping skills to effectively maximize the co-parenting. The 3-10-20 treatment plan indicated family sessions to include child if deemed appropriate as an intervention. A 7-14-21 updated treatment plan included the same goal and identified additional issues as court and alienation and relational issues with the children. Throughout client's therapy, child participated in a number of family sessions with client. During a 7-14-21 individual session with client, licensee noted that client's attorney asked client to request a letter from licensee. A 7-16-21 letter written by licensee on behalf of client included the following in part. In January 2020, client began services with client to address issues around co-parenting and other individual issues such as grief. In March 2017, client divorced from complainant and they have two children together. Client reported going to Alaska then South Africa for personal matters, and upon return, client reports indicators of of her being undermined. Client reported that she discovered she was no longer listed as the mother on official school documents, and complainant's wife was now listed. Client reported feeling frustrated by the lack of co-parenting and diminishing of her role as a mother. It is licensee's professional opinion that the pervasive undermining that client has reportedly been subjected to is a blatant disrespect to her as the children's mother. Licensee states this is alienating of her as their mother. Licensee states parental alienation can be very detrimental to the parent-child relationship, impacting the children in a negative way. It is highly concerning that licensee wrote this letter for the following reasons. This letter was entered as evidence during a court custody case. Client told licensee that her attorney told her to request a letter from licensee. Licensee provided an inappropriate opinion that client was being alienated and client was being disrespected based on what client reported. Licensee only gathered information from client. Licensee's decision to provide this letter upon request from client appears biased. Licensee knew there was an ongoing court case and that client would use this letter in court. Furthermore, licensee felt this letter was within her scope and appropriate since she was providing a summary of client's services and what client reported to her. Despite licensee representing the letter was written to indicate what client reported, she incongruously provided an opinion that based on what client reported, client was being blatantly disrespected and the undermining is alienating of client as their mother. Additionally, licensee acknowledged writing no more than 5 other letters for other clients. And that is all I have, unless you have questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from board members? You will have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay.
Hello to the board. I proudly have a private practice in Prescott, Arizona. This is my livelihood, and I take it very seriously. I work mostly with individuals. My caseload is 50-50 split of adults and minors. The adults mostly come to see me for EMDR, which I am certified. The children and adolescents see me for a variety of issues. Due to working with minors, I am often involved in the family courts and often deal with high conflict cases. I also serve as a youth advocate in my community in my spare time. With acknowledging my KCREP accredited education, advanced trainings, and experience of 18 plus years, my intention was to write a letter from the narrow scope of which was reported to me from my client's perspective. I was not acting as an investigator in this case. I did my due diligence and found nothing that stated these types of letters were not okay. I understand now that this letter was a mistake and is deemed inappropriate and not within my scope, especially the conclusion paragraph. I assure the board that I will never engage in this activity again. I have received multiple letter requests since the complaint, and I have declined with certainty for all of those requests. I appreciate your consideration and attention in this matter.
Do board members have any questions for the witness? This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. And Dr. DeRubis is here.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the board. It's as if we've seen this before, inappropriate letter, Arizona Revised Statute 3232-5116-M. It's always unfortunate to live without passion, but in the behavioral health field, our passion should be based in fact as well as feeling. We learn through time that our pens must be managed, much as our tongues must be managed. We've neither been taught to offer unfavorable opinions of those we have neither evaluated nor served, nor to parrot the opinions of others when we've not established that those opinions are based in fact. I feel compelled to give my colleagues opportunities to offer their ideas before I move to find for the violation of ARS 3232-5116-M as described in the investigative summary.
I just want to note that, you know, when these things go to attorneys and judges and they see professional opinion and they see our credentials, it weighs heavily on their decisions, and so that's why we take these so seriously. And so it goes to that last paragraph, which is the concern. I just wanted to put that on the record.
But.
When I have practiced, I have purposely declined to write letters except to the client. Now, I've written letters to the client to say, this is what I understand, this is what we understood, this is what we are doing. But these other letters written with opinions about other people that we're not seeing, not a good idea. So I move it.
Last 2 seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Oppose? Motion carries.
A licensee should be offered a consent agreement stipulating that the licensee be placed on probation for 12 months. The licensee will be ordered to complete a 3-credit-hour graduate course in behavioral health ethics. The licensee should be ordered to complete a 6-hour course equivalent to the staying out of trouble course. And upon successful completion of the courses and presentation of the certificates of completion, the licensee may request release from the consent agreement. I'd like to ensure, though, that my colleagues believe that 12 months is sufficient. Any opposition? I move it.
Second try.
With one modification.
I'll just for the record, because sometimes it's also helpful for staff to capture it all. We'd be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. She'd be required to take a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics, 6 CEUs in staying out of trouble or the equivalent. If not signed, she'll be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing.
That's my motion.
Trotter, second.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Cunard.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobutz.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Sameek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Fredrickson, for being here. Best of luck to you. We will now go to 7F. I believe the applicant is going to be on the phone. Correct.
If we could go ahead and call the next matter, and I'll have staff reach out to Ms. Tucker to see if she can be available.
Yes, so we will go to Ms. Osborne. Is Ms. Osborne present? Come forward, please. And we'll start with a summary from board staff.
So, Madam Chair, this case, along with two others, go together. I was kind of trying to put them more in a presentation way, and that's why we're going to call Ms. Tucker first, but we'll go ahead and discuss Ms. Osborne in regards to the clinical supervision portion of this. Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation, ARS 32-3251-16-CI, making any oral or written representation, misrepresentation of a fact to secure or attempt to secure the issuance or renewal of a license. This recommendation is based on the following. From 8/12 to 5/19, licensee worked at agency. From approximately 2/16 to 9/21, applicant worked at agency as a primary therapist at one of agency's locations. On 10/5/21, applicant submitted a clinical supervisor exemption request for LPC licensure with licensee as a proposed supervisee at agency. This was concerning as applicant was not licensed and there was no application on file. Therefore, it was unclear as to why this request was sent. On 10-29-21, board staff received applicant's LPC application and a counseling verification of supervised work experience form that included the following. The reporting period was from 5-1-16 to 5-1-20. Qualifying clinical supervision was provided throughout the entire time period being verified. There are 300 total hours of supervised work experience in the practice of counseling in the reporting period. Supervisor certifies that applicant was engaged in the supervised practice of counseling that met the board's requirements and was observed during supervised hours to have demonstrated satisfactory competency in documentation, consultation, collaboration, and coordination of care. Licensee's written response represents the following. On 10-19-21, licensee mistakenly executed a verification of supervised work experience form for applicant. After executing the form, she realized that she was not authorized to execute the form because she was not and has never been applicant's clinical supervisor. Licensee asked applicant to contact owner to obtain the necessary attestation for her verification form. At no time did licensee provide clinical supervision to applicant. All clinical supervision of agency's treatment professionals in Arizona and Oregon was overseen by ONA. Licensee attested on the verification of the supervised work experience form that applicant was engaged in the supervised practice of counseling that met the board's requirements and the applicant was observed during supervised hours to have demonstrated satisfactory competency. The form contained an attestation that all the information is true and correct to the best of licensee's knowledge, and it was understood that false statements or misrepresentations may be grounds for disciplinary action. Licensee represented the following in her investigative interview. Licensee would see applicant infrequently, but they had regular scheduled communication. Owner was the clinical supervisor who would staff cases and answer clinical type questions. Licensee would be involved in a support role during these interactions and would answer more logistical questions. Licensee thought she was helping applicant because she needed verification of hours that she had gathered during that time frame and that thought she'd be confirming that she had had those hours. Licensee wanted to be supportive of applicant's career. Licensee does not recall who filled out the form, but would assume applicant would have had to fill it out. Licensee would not have had any of that information. Licensee does not know how many hours applicant would have been accumulating, and she takes accountability as she should have had nothing to do with that form. Licensee believes applicant sent her form in because she was familiar with licensee and they participated in staff meetings. Licensee's role was to fill out the communication gaps with owner. So if an employee needed something from him and there was no response, they could contact licensee. Licensee did not have a supervision agreement with applicant. Licensee misrepresented as it relates to applicant's application when she signed a form attesting to applicant's supervised work experience, having not participated in that role. It is concerning that based on the representations of owner and applicant, it would appear someone is being untruthful in regards to the role licensee was involved in as it relates to the applicant. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 3232516II as it relates to ARS 323286 unlawful practice. This recommendation is based on the following. From 8/12 to 5/19, licensee worked at agency which was not licensed by DHS. Licensee initially worked at agency's Idaho location. In 6/1/20, licensee obtained her LPC license by endorsement. Licensee represented the following in her investigative interview. There were instances when licensee provided psychotherapy services to individuals in Arizona with federal contracts. Licensee believed that because it was a federal contract, they would be working under owner's license. Licensee did not take the initiative to investigate any further at that time, but now understands that would not be allowed. Licensee provided psychotherapy services in Arizona from approximately 2014 or 2015 until the time she no longer worked at agency in 2019. When she was in Arizona more frequently, she would have a caseload of approximately 30 to 40 clients. Although not all agencies' locations were on reservation, sometimes Native clients would travel from the reservation. While at agency, licensee reviewed the contracts under which she believed she was allowed to practice. By her own admission, licensee provided psychotherapy services in Arizona for approximately 4 or 5 years and until as recently as of 2019. It is highly concerning that licensee reviewed contracts that outlined a requirement for licensure and proceeded to provide psychotherapy services in Arizona while unlicensed. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Swallow. Do board members have any questions? You'll have up to 7 minutes to address the board now.
Thank you. Madam Chair, board members, thank you for allowing me a few minutes of your time. Investigator Vergala shared her report with me, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to reply. First and foremost, I do not disagree with Investigator Vergala's analysis. My comments to the board today are offered for the purpose of determining whether clemency is warranted in my case. To help the board weigh its many disciplinary options in my case, I would point you to the 7 factors found in Arizona Administrative Code Section R46-1001 for guidance. Prior disciplinary offenses. I have not been formally disciplined by the board or any other professional disciplinary boards throughout my career as an LPC in Arizona or an LCPC in Idaho. Dishonest or self-serving motive. My actions were not intentionally dishonest or self-serving. I was attempting to help a former colleague that was working towards being in compliance with COVID. Pattern of misconduct. There is no pattern of misconduct. This discipline that I now face is the result of a one-time mistake that has not been repeated. Bad faith obstruction of the disciplinary proceeding. I have fully cooperated with all board procedural steps in good faith. This is evidenced by my affidavit and my cooperation with Investigator Fervala's interview process. Submission of false evidence or statements during the investigative process. In her analysis, Investigator Fervala expressed concern about the incongruent representations of my role as provided by owner and applicant. In no way did Investigator Fervala accuse me of providing false evidence to interrupt the process. I ask that I not be punished for the conflicting statements given by the other parties in this investigation. Refusal to acknowledge the wrongful nature of conduct. I assure the board that my mistake and poor judgment in this matter were my own. I understand and take accountability for my part in this wrongful conduct. And finally, the vulnerability of the victim. The victim in this case is the state of Arizona. While I acknowledge my poor judgment, any potential harms to the state resulting from my action pale in comparison to the individual victims of disciplinary matters when licensees victimize their individual clients. I ask the board and Madam Chair to consider the following information. I'm currently providing sex offender treatment services to clients that are on federal supervised release and county felony probation. If I'm not allowed to continue providing services and supervise other clinicians, these individuals, many of whom reside on the Navajo, Hopi, and Apache reservations, may not continue receiving services, and their treatment will likely be interrupted for a long period of time. As a business owner, it is very difficult to identify and hire behavioral health providers that are able and willing to provide services and assessment to individuals that have engaged in sexually assaultive behaviors. I have been seeking to hire licensed professionals since October of 2021 to assist with my current caseload. I continue to carry a large caseload and provide services as I have not been able to identify enough suitable licensed clinicians to meet the need for services for this particular population. It is noteworthy that Coconino County adult probation clients with sexual offense behaviors have been without treatment services for approximately 6 months. The county was not able to identify a single provider in the state of Arizona able and willing to provide sex offender treatment service and assessment to clients on felony supervision for sexual offenses. After a second request for contract bids, I agreed to submit a bid to meet the treatment need and started providing providing treatment services this month. If I'm not able to continue in my current capacity as the clinical supervisor and a counselor providing services to Coconino County Adult Probation, I will likely have to terminate the contract with the county, leaving approximately 40 clients without weekly treatment services and little hope of another provider willing to provide these much-needed services. I would greatly appreciate a consequence that takes into consideration the current duty that I have to my clients, employees, and contracted agencies. I would ask that the consequence from the board allow me to seek further education in the areas where I displayed deficiencies and allow me to continue providing specialized services to criminal populations that I have extensive training and qualifications to provide. Thank you again for your careful consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Osborne. Are there questions from board members? No questions? All right, this will be our time to talk amongst ourselves. We ask that you not interrupt. And Ms. Meek, I believe you're leading this discussion.
Yes, I've been assigned this, and I have read all the documents in its entirety. Based on information, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support a violation of the local practice. 32-3251-16-II. And there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support a violation of misrepresentation. 32-3251-16-II.
And any motion before? Make a motion.
So I move to offer a disciplinary.
Okay. First, we got to take the motion for the violations.
So, okay, so
the violations you just listed.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's your motion. Is there a second?
Yeah, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now, what you want to do with it?
So, based on the information, I am recommending a disciplinary consent agreement. I'm recommending a 2 years supervision, staying out of trouble, 6-hour course, and 3-hour ethics.
Whatever you would prefer for the ethics portion. The staying out of trouble is 6 hours. If you wanted to do an additional ethics, it would be up to yours and the board's decision on how many hours that you'd like that to be.
I'd like to discuss that. And also, I'm considering supervision, but I would like to discuss that with first, supervision, and then what do you recommend for the ethics?
I appreciate the idea of supervision just because it seems like there was a real disregard for, you know, standards of practice, and especially Arizona, and it concerns me that she's looking to hire people and without that understanding herself. And so I think that having extra guidance, especially in regards to practicing here in Arizona, is really important. So I would encourage the clinical supervision at least once a month for a period of time.
I would also recommend taking the 12-hour clinical supervision course to have a better understanding of what is entailed in clinical supervision. It's very specific of the role of a clinical supervisor.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that because it's our understanding from the presentation this morning that, you know, the licensee is and will provide supervision. So to have that knowledge is very important. So it's a 12-hour supervision.
You said that we're going to still discuss the ethics course, or is there anything special about that?
Just the number of hours, 3 versus 6.
Okay. What's the more staff feel about that?
I'm leaning...
Oh, board, I'm sorry.
three.
Leaning towards three?
Yeah, but I would like some.
I think they have the clinical supervision and the staying out of trouble, so I think it would be appropriate. Anybody else?
That's true.
That?
Mm-hmm. Okay. 3 hours.
That's it?
The 12-hour supervision.
And then you had mentioned clinical supervision.
Yes.
Once a month.
Once a month.
Once
a release, and now after 12, or what's the duration for that? Do you want 24 months, 12 months?
Well, I'm thinking 24 months of supervision for the first year. The once, twice a month. Nope.
24 months over 2 years.
Just
once a month for the first year, but if you think twice a month, I mean, I think that's up for debate, and then we could decide what to do for the remainder of it.
Okay. Once a month, I think, is probably adequate.
Are you in the, do you agree that the next year, potentially, depending on what the clinical supervisor recommends, with the
for the release from
If it's going to be released or if they need to.
So after the first 12 months?
Yeah, up to the clinical
recommendation
supervision.
From the supervisor will be considered.
Okay.
Can I just make a note for the record, just because I think a lot was said in the presentation from the licensee, and so I get that there was a lot of presentation about confusion of roles and et cetera. And there was a mention about not victimizing individual clients. The reason that this seems so significant, and I appreciate the consent agreement being solid, is because the board relies on not only the supervision verification, but the work experience verification to issue licenses. And if we're going based on somebody's representation that somebody is meeting those standards and we issue a license, there are so many individual clients that were at risk before and potentially after, because we don't know what they've been doing or who has been overseeing that work. So I just, for the record, that's why I think this is an appropriate level.
So we'd be offering a licensee a consent agreement for 24 months. She would be required to get clinical supervision once monthly. The focus would be on documentation, behavioral health ethics, board statutes, and rules. Just based on your conversation, I included in there how to supervise, how to be a clinical supervisor. And then after 12 months, at the recommendation of the clinical supervisor, she could be released not only from the supervision, but from the entire consent agreement if everything else has been met. She'd also be required to take 6 CEUs in staying out of trouble or the equivalent, 3 CEUs in behavioral health ethics, as well as 12 CEUs in clinical supervision. And if not signed, she'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
That's my motion.
Is there a second?
Well, that's your second.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Kunat.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobatz.
Aye.
Pauline Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Sinek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Osborne, for being here. Best of luck to you.
Madam Chair, if we can go back to Ms. Tucker, agenda item 7H. If we could go on to the next matter, what we'll do is we'll have Ms. Tucker call the conference line. For some reason, we even unblocked it. For some reason, it's not going through, but we do know that she's there waiting for a call.
Okay, so we're going to go to 7B in the meantime, and he is going to be on the phone as well, right, Mr. Heindel?
That is correct.
Right. See if we have better luck with him.
Hi, Chris. This is Patricia, the board's chairperson.
Yes.
And we are getting ready to hear your matter. And just to give you an idea of how we'll proceed, it is a public meeting, so there's public members here in the audience. And then we have the board members and board staff. We will hear a brief summary from board staff, and then we'll give you a chance to address the board after that. We have read all of the material, so we just ask that you not take time repeating what we've already received. And then if you could mute your mic in the meantime, we would appreciate that.
Sounds good. We'll do it.
All right. Thank you. Board staff?
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation, ARS 3252516N, failing to comply with or violating, attempting to violate, or assisting in or abetting the violation of any provision of this chapter, any rule adopted pursuant to this chapter, any lawful order of the board, or any formal order, consent agreement, term of probation, or stipulated agreement issued under this chapter. This recommendation is based on the following. On 10-5-21, an applicant submitted a clinical supervisor exemption request for LPC licensure for a proposed supervisor at agency. This was concerning as applicant was not licensed and there was no application on file. Therefore, it was unclear as why this request was sent. The agency on the form is owned and operated by licensee, has multiple locations across three states and did not appear to be licensed by the Department of Health Services. From approximately 2-16 to 9-16-21, applicant was employed at agency as a primary therapist at the Sierra Vista office. On 10-29-21, the board received applicant's LPC application. In a 10-29-21 email from licensee to board staff, licensee indicated the following in part. Applicant was a great employee with no write-ups or corrective actions in 5.5 years. There are no supervision notes as they had weekly contact on a regular basis in order to complete the work. Licensee represented the following in his written response. Since 2008, agency has been working with the United States District Court, District of Arizona, and probation officers in northern and southern Arizona. The contracts agency has been awarded are some of the most difficult contracts to service since all are extremely rural and most are on reservations. It was assumed that if the United States District Court, District of Arizona, was awarding contracts and monitoring them, knowing the therapists were working under his supervision, that they were not violating any rule. In review of the contract licensee utilized, it appeared that there are multiple mentions that personnel must meet certain requirements, including being licensed or certified and meet the standards of practice as established by their state regulatory board. Licensee represented the following in his investigative interview. It was licensee's understanding that since they were awarded the contracts with federal probation and it was difficult to provide this work on the reservations, that there was an exclusion for that in reservations and rural areas. At times, they had licensed individuals working, but a majority of the time they were not. It was a struggle to find anybody willing to do the work they do in rural areas that were also licensed. All agency clients were receiving psychotherapy services from agency staff. None of agency's locations were licensed by the Department of Health Services, nor were they licensed at any point. Licensee opened a behavioral health practice in a state he was not licensed in at the time, and that his employees were not licensed in because he was asked by federal probation. From licensee's point of view at that time, he was not doing anything wrong. In looking back and rereading the contract and what it asked for, he understands. Licensee allowed applicant to practice without a license at agency for over 5 years. Furthermore, since around 2008, licensee has been operating an agency that offers psychotherapy services by unlicensed staff while not being a Department of Health Services licensed agency. It is highly concerning that licensee reviewed contracts on multiple occasions that outlined a requirement for licensed staff and did not abide by Arizona rules and statutes regarding the practice of behavioral health. And that's all I have unless you have questions for me.
Thank you, Ms. Sabella. Do board members have any questions? Mr. Hendel, you have up to 5 minutes now to address the board.
Thank you. I think that statement is accurate. I just want to mention that I did not do anything to hide any of our actions as an agency. I'm a licensed therapist in the state of Arizona. And again, it was my understanding that that was sufficient. We didn't hide anything from federal probation or from anyone else. And it was just my understanding that we were operating appropriately since come out. I've been enlightened, and I just want to say that I do not want to be seen and be thought of as trying to hide anything. And I know what we need to do at this time. We don't have any federal probation contracts anymore. We don't work anymore in Sierra Vista, and we've stopped working in those areas. So I just wanted to state that, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Do board members have any questions for the licensee? I have a question, Mr. Hendel. This is Patricia, board's chair. You didn't take any supervisor training until this past May, is that correct? May 2022?
That's correct. I mean, I had supervisor training several times, but I assume you're talking about Arizona.
Correct. So can you speak?
So that's correct.
So can you speak to just the thought process of having this employee who's walking through apparently the independent licensure process? And I'm just trying to get your sense of why you thought she was able to submit and why we weren't keeping supervision notes and all of these, and why hadn't we looked into this if we'd been a supervisor in other states?
She wasn't an employee at that time when she was applying, and so I didn't know that she was doing that or applying. But again, my assumption was that since we've been working in Arizona since 2008 with federal probation, and they knew all of our employees, they knew all their situations, they knew my situation, they knew I was licensed there. I've had conversations where, as was previously stated, difficult to get master's level therapists to perform this work on the reservations and with the required travel and extra effort that it normally takes to be, that it was accepted. So I wasn't trying to hide anything or do anything inappropriate that I knew of. And so since they knew of that, they were a government agency, I just assumed I was okay.
So since 2016, you are under the belief that none of your employees, including Ms. Tucker, were working towards licensure?
Our policy is that I recommend and I ask them to work towards licensure. But I can't remember that far back if there was anybody who was actively looking or going towards licensure.
So it wasn't concerning over 6 years that you didn't have anybody at your request that was then following through with licensure?
Again, since I had weekly contact and audits, and they were in our books and in our charts and our paperwork, I assume since federal probation didn't have problems with it, that we were doing things appropriately. And so now it wasn't, but as I look back at it now, it makes sense since I'm working in the state of Arizona. But I thought since I was specifically working with federal probation clients, not Arizona clients, but federal probation clients, I thought the umbrella of authority was federal probation. And so I was answering to them, and that's what I thought was what I needed to do.
Thank you very much. Does anybody else have a question?
Yes. So, hi, this is Doc Davis. Just one question. Did you have a legal consultant for your practice at any point in time from 2008 to current?
I mean, there was an attorney that I worked with that helped us with our articles of incorporation and things like that, but they didn't look into addressing any of these issues. That's not what I used them for. I've never been had any issue or problem in the 20 years I've been doing this work, so I've never needed to access an attorney for anything.
Looking back, do you think that it might have been useful to have that kind of legal oversight for your practice?
Yeah. I mean, looking back, there were a lot of things I would have done differently. I think I would have been still able to serve the clients in Arizona, and these clients wouldn't be without treatment right now. So, yeah, looking back, I would have done things differently.
Thank you.
Any additional questions from board members? This will be our time to talk amongst ourselves, so we ask that you not interrupt.
I have received all the information provided by staff, and I have read everything a couple of times to its entirety. And there is clear and convincing evidence to support the violations for facilitating unlawful practice, ARS 32-3251-16A.
N?
Yeah.
N. It is an N. Is that your motion?
Yes.
Okay. Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And what do you propose moving forward, Ms. Meek?
So first of all, I appreciate the honesty, in response from the previous cases, and the reflection that, things will be different from here on. There is certain concerns, right, of this allowing this practice without, adequate establishing of rules and looking at regulations. So I am proposing disciplinary consent agreement with Arizona tutorials, both of them, the rules and the laws and all of that. They're staying out of trouble. It's like 6 hours of staying out of trouble. Three hours,
is that three
CEUs.
Level credits, credit hours?
Or is that just three CEUs or something?
Staying out of trouble is six college credits, correct? No, 6 hours. Six hours. CEUs.
Trouble with CEUs.
CEUs. The ethics is CEUs. CEUs as well.
And the RTD grant. So you want it to be CEUs, is what you're saying?
I could open that for discussion.
Okay.
So three CEUs versus three college hours.
Graduate, yeah.
But three CEUs is not college at all.
Right.
The reason I asked is because I wondered if, because of the magnitude of the
offense.
Length of time and violation.
If it appeared that the owner of the practice needed to have three graduate level credits of ethics, behavioral health ethics, to really clarify the reality of this situation.
Thank you. Yes. So, three college credit hours on ethics.
I want to be able to also address, and maybe this addresses it, that, I mean, in the contracts that were provided, it says that everything has to be in accordance with the state. So, I don't know what might address contracts, or, I mean, right? Like,
operating your own business or whatnot, yeah.
Yeah. I would chime in and say I think Mr. Heindel is an excellent businessman. I think that is what got into this trouble. So when Mr. Davis asked about an attorney, he had an attorney to make sure he was incorporated in multiple states. I think it's the clinical piece that is missing, and so I have bigger concerns about, I think, similar to the previous case, which is connected. I am leaning more towards clinical supervision and things of that nature. I think if you're going to run a practice and get it up to speed and have people that are licensed and follow the licensing rules like your contract says, I want to see somebody who's independently licensed more concerned about the clinical practice than the business operations. So that's where I would
that you're supposed to be following. Yeah, how do we get there, I guess?
And to be clear, I don't think you need a lawyer to understand that what he was doing was not correct. It was in the plain language. I mean, he's savvy enough to... We ask that question every once in a while just because it sort of adds to the... This was a resource available to him. But it kind of feels like a willful ignorance issue. And so I would agree you don't need to... I think the clinical piece is most critical. And that graduate level ethics course will be helpful for that.
I would even recommend, again, tacking on the 12-hour clinical supervision course to take as well. He's running a business, so his staff employees, he's aware of what is needed for the clinical supervision.
I believe...
He just completed it for the first time in May of 2022. And if the board members, you know, chose to require that, they could require that again. And then he would just not be able to use it towards his renewal or his clinical supervision renewal when that time came.
I would like to propose that, the 12-hour clinical supervision training.
He won't have to retake it. He just can't use those hours.
He's already used those hours and he's on the registry, so he is an approved clinical supervisor. I do think it's important just to note that he did just complete those in May. I'm not suggesting another time wouldn't be helpful, but he did just complete them, you know, just a couple of months ago.
I wonder if more supervision itself, so twice a month for clinical supervision versus the course since he did just But then actually, because that's overseeing the clinical practice and can address supervision and all of those things, too.
So his own supervision.
We could do that.
I like that.
I like it, too. But I do have to note, though, part of the business is not just the entity docs or somebody in the finance world. I check certifications and what is, you know, because opening the business is one thing, but if you're a professional reporting to a board, whatever the case may be, other licenses. It's not just getting your NDE docs together. It is getting your license and understanding what other licenses or, you know, laws procedures that you know your business has to follow. So the willful ignorance, I agree, it's more concerning about the clinical supervision piece, but that was kind of ignorance on actual business, you know, as well. So, but I understand what we're here for. So.
I appreciate that.
All right. One clarification I need is on the clinical supervision. Are we wanting this consent agreement to be for 24 months or for 12 months?
I'd say,
I'd go with 24. I mean, we can see the breadth of this issue across multiple states. How deep it goes, I think there's also a lot of talking about how this is a very difficult client population. You know, we have to take that into consideration as well and making sure that this population is serviced.
Absolutely.
So after a year, would he have the ability to request early release or a reduction in clinical supervision?
Absolutely.
Maybe that you're requiring two times... a month you could consider after a year if you're not inclined to do early release. You could do at the recommendation of the clinical supervisor once a month.
I think I'm more comfortable with that. Twice a month for the first 12 months and once a month after that.
If approved by the supervisor.
Let me read back what I believe that I've captured here. So we'd be offering a consent agreement for 24 months. He would be required to get clinical supervision twice monthly for the first 12 months. After the first 12 months, at the recommendation of the supervisor, he could lessen the amount of supervision, but no less than once monthly. The focus would be on how to supervise and run an agency slash practice, rules and statutes, behavioral health ethics, and documentation. He'd also be required to complete both tutorials, which would be the clinical supervision tutorial, as well as the board tutorial in regards to the renewal. He'd also be required to take 6 CEUs and staying out of trouble or the equivalent, and the 12 clinical supervision hours, as well as 3 graduate level credits, 3 master graduate level credits in behavioral health. If not signed, he'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing.
Perfect.
Would that be
That's
your
what
move?
I move.
Is there a second?
Todd, a second.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Cunard.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Joe Butts.
Aye.
Pauline Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Sameek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios. Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Mr.
I just wonder if we should refer findings, if we should refer any of this to the entity that paid for the 4 years of practice.
In regards to the contracts? Well, if the board were to motion that, board staff would just provide the contractual, the individual citing that other contractual relationship, the information that we have.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Hinell? This will conclude this matter. Board staff will be following up with you, so you'll get an outline of everything that was discussed and your options for moving forward. And we appreciate you being available to participate via phone today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. We are trying to
see. I believe that Ms. Harper is on the conference line.
Record, this is 7F.
Welcome to Lumen Conferencing. Please enter your passcode. Second person to join the meeting.
Ms. Tucker?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. All right, this is Patricia, the board's chairperson, and we are getting ready to hear your matter. Just so you know, it's a public meeting, so there's public audience here, the board members and board staff. And the way we'll proceed is board staff will give a brief summary, and then you'll have a chance to address the board. We have read and reviewed all the materials, so we just ask that you not repeat information that we already have. And while board staff is giving their summary, if you would mute your phone, please.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Laura, Mr. Carver?
Yep. Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation: ARS 32-3251-16II in regards to ARS 32-3286 unlawful practice. This recommendation is based on the following: on 10-5-21, applicant submitted a clinical supervisor exemption request for LPC licensure for a proposed supervisor at agency. This was concerning as applicant was not licensed and there was no application on file. Therefore, it was unclear as to why this request was being sent. After conversations with board staff, agency's owner confirmed applicant was providing psychotherapy services without a license for approximately 5.5 years. Since approximately 2 of 16, applicant was employed at agency as a primary therapist. On 10/29/21, the board received applicant's LPC application with a counseling verification of supervised work experience that indicated the following. The reporting period was from 5/1/16 to 5/1/20. Qualifying clinical supervisor was provided throughout the entire time period being verified. There are a total of 300 hours of supervised work experience in the practice of counseling in the reporting period. Applicant represented the following in her written response. From 5/14 to 5/16, applicant was an intern with the agency. On 5/1/16, applicant was offered a permanent position as a primary therapist. This was the understanding that she was going to be able to perform the job under owner, a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of Arizona. Per the government contract with the United States Federal Probation and Pretrial Services, applicant was informed that in order to perform this job per the contract, she needed to have a master's degree and work under a licensed professional. Applicant believed she was allowed to provide counseling services because of agency's contract. This is highly concerning given the agency's contract outlined the requirements for the staff members providing necessary services. For various behavioral health services, the contract outlines the practitioner providing the service must be licensed or certified psychiatrist, psychologist, master's or doctoral level practitioner who meets the standards of practice established by the state's regulatory board. Applicant was providing psychotherapy services while unlicensed at an agency that was not licensed by the Department of Health Services for approximately 6 years. Applicant represented the following in her investigative interview. In 2014, she was an intern at the agency. In 2016, applicant graduated with a master's in counseling, but did not officially get her degree until 8 of 16. In 5 of 16, applicant was hired and performed counseling services until receiving notice of this investigation. Applicant believed she was allowed to practice services because of the government contract agency had. Applicant now understands she cannot provide behavioral health services until she has the proper license and takes full responsibility and accountability for not doing her own research. And that's all I have unless you have questions for me.
Do board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Ms. Tucker, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board now.
Okay, thank you for your time. This is Mata. So in 2014 through 2016, I was with my intern. In 2016, I also applied for my LAC with the board. It was found to be deficient because of the credit hours that I received from Wayland Baptist. In 2018, I applied again with the board. It was found to be deficient because the date on the syllabus did not match the date of when I actually started the class. And so they denied it because of that. Due to that issue, I wrote Governor Ducey. That in turn led me to be able to talk to the director, Toby Zavala. I spoke with her, and there was a clarification given on the fact that my syllabus had to match. So I went to Capella, which is a K-Corp university. I had them to send a letter showing that the syllabus dates were moving dates because their courses were offered online. In 2020, I applied again for my LAC. That again was denied for the same reason. In 2021, I applied for the exemption due to the fact that I was working under that contract. Personally, with the board, I feel as though that I am being targeted because I wrote the letter to Governor Ducey. I also find it ironic that I'm the only person out of the 20-something odd therapists or however many therapists that H&H has that also worked under that contract without a license. I'm the only one that has had to be investigated. I'm also the only one that has had to quit my job. And since December 13 of 2021, I have not worked. I have not performed any licensed services. I have not did anything unethical. As an employee of a company, if they tell you that you are able to be working under them, it is not the employee's position to say, well, I need to see the contract so that I can read it myself. So I didn't ask them to see the contract. I was told that I had to have my master's degree and I could work under a licensed therapist. So that's exactly what I did. I am not the only one that worked under a licensed therapist. However, I am the only one that's been investigated. investigated. So I do take issue with the board because of that. I also take issue with the fact that they're saying that there was never an application for licensure on file. Again, I filed for LAC in 2016, 2018, 2020, and the last attempt was the 2021, in which I asked for the exemption because I had already been working there for so many years. I've never tried to do anything unethical, and like I said, I'm not going to, if you hire someone, they're not going to ask you to see, can I see what you're talking about as far as the contract. They're going to assume that the employer knows what they're doing, and they're going to take a job because of that. I do take full responsibility for not asking my employer, can I go back and look at the contract that you're telling me about? I didn't find out about what the contract actually said until this investigation came about. So when I took the job, I was well under the knowledge that I could work the job under a licensed provider, as with the other therapists that were also working there who were also not licensed under this same licensed provider. So again, the issue for me is, why am I singled out when the rest of the people are not under the same investigation?
Thank you. This is Patricia Boyd, chairperson. I just have a question, Ms. Tucker. Do you understand for counseling in Arizona that it's a two-tiered licensure system, meaning the licensed associate, the associate license comes first, and that's how you then work your way to the licensed professional counseling?
Yes, but I didn't understand the clinical exemption form, which is what I told the investigator. I thought that the form meant that, I'm sorry?
Well, the exemption request that you filled out was for a supervisor that was not employed by the agency. Those are the boxes that you checked on that, which is different than, so I'm just confused because it sounds like you wanted an exemption from having an associate license and to go straight to an LPC, which is not what the exemption request is for.
No, I was trying to get the exemption to count my hours because I had already been in there, and that under the time that I was applying as the LAC, I was under the supervision of Shelley Osborne, who worked for the company at that time, as well as Chris Andell, who's the owner of the company. I was denied the LAC because this class didn't match Article 5, so I had to present all of my syllabus to you guys, which I did. I did it twice, 2016, 2018.
I understand. I just wanted to make sure that I was understanding where the confusion was, because you would not be an LPC applicant until an LAC was issued. So with all of those denials, I was trying to follow how you got to apply for the LPC. That's why I was trying to find the confusion with the exemption.
And that was the confusion which I explained to the investigator on the forefront.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to connect the dots for myself. Thank you. Do board members have any additional questions for Ms. Tucker?
Ms. Tucker, it's Doc Davis. I'm just wondering, when you are denied, when your application is denied the first time, would you understand why it was denied and then do whatever it would take to correct whatever was wrong, whatever was problematic, before applying a second time?
Yes, sir. I do exactly that. Everything that was asked for me when it was denied the first time, I sent it back in, and then they accepted the information from the first time, but there was one clause that the date said January 1st, and the syllabus, my transcript said January 1st, but the syllabus said December 25th, and I was as the syllabus date and the transcript date did not match. So I had to go get a letter from Capella University to show you guys that it was the same class. And then after that, it was denied again for whatever reason, and that's when I wrote Governor Ducey.
But you say that it was denied again. And did you correct?
Right, because you got tested again. Yes.
Did you correct whatever was problematic the second time?
No, I did not correct what was problematic the second time because they denied it and they wanted me to take the class again. I don't have the money to continue to take courses that I've already taken.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from board members?
Madam Chair, if you would give me a moment to address some of the statements that were made, because I think it's important for the public.
Ms. Tucker's reference, is it Ms. Zavala's?
Yes. Ms. Tucker, this is Ms. Zavala. So I just want to clarify, kind of go into a little bit more detail for the public, Madam Chair, that the two-tier licensure basically... The easiest way to explain it is the associate level is to meet the academic credentials. And the independent level is once you've reached the academic credentials, you've got the appropriate direct client contacts and the supervision needed to become independently licensed where you can go practice independently. So just making that kind of clear. And I also just kind of want to go on the record that it's never the board nor board staff's idea to ever target anybody for any such of a thing. Ms. Tucker, it was brought to our attention that she was practicing without a license, and we would treat that like anybody else. She had an active application within our board. She has mentioned there's several other people that may have provided services under the same contract, not licensed. First and foremost, I'm not aware of any of those individuals. Secondly, I'm not aware that any are currently licensed by us to have authority over them or have an application. So it's not that we are going after Ms. Tucker personally. It's just the fact that it was brought to our attention. And then for the record, I'm not even aware of a letter that has been sent to Governor Ducey. So that's all I have.
And I would add to that clarification that it wasn't the letter or anything from Mr. Ducey that led to being able to contact you because you're available to all the licensees.
Absolutely. And when we talk about the syllabus, I see, I look around the room and I see a couple of members probably kind of questioning that. And what it looks like is we have an academic review committee where if they don't come in at a certain type of a degree or a certain approved program, then our academic committee, who's also appointed by the governor's office, will review the course description and the course syllabi. And the syllabi has to be from the same semester that you took the course to ensure that it has the correct components. But again, I don't really think that's an issue of today. The issue of today is that she was practicing without a license.
Thank you, Ms. Zavala.
Madam Chair, quick question. Dr. Zavala, I'm not advocating by any means of further investigation made on the allegations that were said here today, but in a situation like this in which a claim is made that is pretty egregious, what does staff do in this? Does there need to be a specific complaint made by?
There doesn't. I think just knowing that today, it's something where we would reach out to the owner of the agency to find out if there's anybody, to get a list of individuals that have provided services. But just be reminded, we only have regulatory authority over people that are either licensed by us or have an application. So if these individuals are really out there practicing without a license, the only thing that the boards can do is offer a cease and desist. And if it's already occurred in the past, I'm not sure how we go backwards. We'll report it to the auditor, or not the auditor, the Attorney General's Office Consumer Fraud Department. So, but I have made note of what was said, but how we get there.
I'm sorry, Ms. Tucker, hold on one second. This is our time that Ms. Zavala is answering a board member's question.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
So I've made a note of it, and we will reach out, but I think unless they're licensed by us or they have a current application, it's a little difficult for our board because we don't have authority.
Do board members have any other questions for Ms. Tucker? Okay, Ms. Tucker, this is going to be our time to deliberate and talk amongst ourselves, so you're able to...
For a second, though?
I believe we have all of the information that we need moving forward. So at this time...
But they're not giving the correct information. So am I able to say what they told me when I first got investigated?
I will give you 2 minutes to summarize. We have 138 pages of information that we've reviewed. So I will give you 2 minutes
okay.
to summarize whatever else you want to add.
Okay, so when I was told that I was being investigated, also the agency, H&H, was also being investigated. So as an investigator, if you're investigating an agency, you're going to investigate the other people that work there as well.
Okay, I would ask that you keep your comments to your complaint, and that's what we're hearing right now. Other matters and other pending investigations and what else is happening is not for discussion right now. So if there's something to your case and your complaint, I will welcome that, but otherwise we're going to move forward with deliberations.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So we're going to move forward with deliberations. We ask that you not interrupt. And Ms. Speak, you're leading this discussion as well.
Yes, so thank you. I have reviewed all of the information that was provided. There is clear and convincing evidence to support the violation of unlawful practice. ARS 32-32-86. We'll accept that.
And motion is to find violation.
Yes.
Sorry, I was trying to find it in minutes. Is there a second?
Kumarad, second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And moving forward. And remember, this is an applicant, so
yep. There's no additional recommendation.
We need to deny the application as well.
So, based on what I've heard today, the next vote would be to recommend to deny for unprofessional conduct.
Sure. Is that your motion, Ms. Smith?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a second?
Yeah, second.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Patricia Dobatz.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelisa Meek.
Aye.
Diane Palacios.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Motion carries. Ms. Tucker, this will conclude this matter. You will receive follow-up from the board outlining what happened today. If you do have questions before then, you can reach out to your investigator next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. It is 11:40. We're going to take a quick break. If everybody can be really quick, let's come back at 11:45.
That was a great look.
We will come back to order. It is 11:49. And we will go to agenda item number 10, our applications for licensure and education programs. Ms. Valerie, do you want to speak to licenses issued? We'll go to recommended for denial, starting with counsel.
So the Council Academic Review Committee has reviewed applications and recommended denials as follows. 5 applications based on failure to meet minimum requirements. 8 applications based on failure to pass the required examination. 12 applications based on failure to take the required examination. And 2 applications based on finding of unprofessional conduct for a total of 27.
For a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Marriage and Family Therapy Academic Review Committee has reviewed applications and recommended denial for 2 applications based on failure to meet minimum requirements, and that's my motion. Is there a second?
Got a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Social Work Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of individuals and recommends denial for licensure for 25 applicants, 13 applications based on a failure to pass the required examination, 12 applications based on a failure to take the required examination for a total of 25, and I move it.
Knapp, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And substance abuse?
Sure. The Substance Abuse Academic Review Committee has reviewed applications and recommends denials as follows. 3 applications based on failure to pass the required examination. 5 applications based on failure to take the required examination. 1 application based on finding of unprofessional conduct. I recommend denial for a total of 9.
Mr. Second?
Second.
Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then for 10B, we have one institution, Bethany Lutheran College Master of Arts in Clinical Mental Health Counseling, that's been recommended for approval. Is there a motion to approve?
Davis moves it.
Second, Kramer.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. To 12, I report from the treasurer, and Dr. Bailey is gone. I believe we're going to have to table 12B. And Doc, since this is your avenue, do you want to make a motion for the June financials?
We have reviewed and we have approved the June financials, and I move that we accept them.
Is there a second?
Second, Trotter.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now we will go to, do you want to go to 13, this is all to you, or do you want to go to the inactive status?
Why don't we go ahead and go to the inactive status?
All right, we'll go to agenda item number 14. We have one request for extension of inactive, Ms. DeGomez. Ms. Saval, I don't know if you want to speak to us first.
I always just like to remind the members, because it's not something we see often. When somebody is licensed by us, they can request to become inactive for one licensing period. That can be approved by board staff, and it can be for any reason. Mr. Gomez did request that to take care of her mother. She's now come back with a second extension request, and this is in regards to the documents here, but it's in regards to going on a mission. As a reminder, the board members have to look at the three reasons on why you can approve. One is for military, one is for health, and one is for something out of the licensee's control. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Lara. It does not seem to meet one of those rationales for extension. I don't know if anybody thinks differently.
I'm in agreement.
Is there a motion to deny the extension?
So moved, Trotter.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And that was a difficult vote for me. Because... It's an important thing that they're doing.
Correct. Noted. All right. And now do you want to go to 13, Ms. Lowell?
Yeah, so we can go ahead and go to 13A. So 13A is an update on the tutorials to include supervised private practice and department and health service questions. So over the last several months, as our board members are aware, we've been getting a multitude of complaints and individuals that are basically practicing without the appropriate license. And oftentimes they're using, you know, the fact whether it's licensed by DHS or not as a mitigating circumstance. And so one of our board members, I believe it might have been Dr. Bailey, had asked if maybe we could include that in our tutorials. And being that our tutorials are a third party, we have reached out to them, and they're just waiting for us to finish it up. So moving forward, probably within a month, we will have them on our tutorials, and there'll be questions in regards to supervised private practice and DHS licensed agencies, just to maybe help people understand a little bit better of what that difference is.
Thank you so much.
The next one is discussion regarding board meeting continuing education. So this is kind of an interesting thought here. So we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but Mr. Botts and Ms. Kramer and I went to a counseling conference in Philadelphia in August. And as you know, we always like to take away things at the end of the day. I think it always makes us just a better person in general, a better professional, and a better clinician. But one of the takeaways this time, and I believe we were sitting at a round table, and Ms. Kramer had mentioned, boy, I wish we could make like everybody come to a board meeting. Because it's beneficial. It's beneficial for those, whether they're in school or whether they're already licensed by a board, but that's not something that we're able to do. So after some thought, we talked a little bit about it's something that the board can consider, because right now under our renewal CEUs, an individual that's licensed by our board can take up to 6 CEUs on coming to a board meeting as long as they're not on the agenda. So what was discussed with myself and Mr. Brown
thoughts at that meeting was, I think it's something that the board members should consider and discuss, where when you are offering a CA and you feel that it would be beneficial for somebody to, you know, come to a board meeting, whether you, you know, we can talk about this today, whether it's, you know, one board meeting within a 12-month period, whether it's a certain number of hours, I do think it's beneficial, and I don't think that Ms. Kramer is the first person that has mentioned how great it would be if we mandated them to do it, but we can't mandate them to do it, but we can require them through a disciplinary or non-disciplinary consent agreement that they come to a board meeting. Again, I'm thinking either, you know, one within a 12-month period or a certain number of hours, but I think that should be discussed in regards to that.
I have a quick question. We're not allowed to mandate that for renewal?
We're not allowed to add any additional stipulations unless we were to take it through the rule process or through the statute process. And adding anything to our requirements at this time probably is not something that would be able to be occurred.
And over the years, I've invited repeatedly, sometimes just as a matter of course, because I do see the value of presence, and I learn something at every board meeting. So I think it's a good idea. I would not want to see it as a part of a consent agreement, though, because people might already have their sentiments because of the disciplinary process. So I would not want them to come, in effect, against their will.
I think, especially when you have, like, applicants, right, or those that are newly licensed, that maybe aren't grasping why we are taking something so seriously or where this could spiral into. I think sitting and listening to other complaints can put things into perspective. And the other thing is the, you know, why me? I can't believe I've been, you know, having to do this, but you see, you know, the spectrum of what we see and hear. So I don't know. I don't think it would be not worth putting in a for certain ones. I don't think it's standard, but...
Mm-hmm.
We didn't take action on anything today. It's just something to consider in the future. So I agree that sometimes it would not be appropriate. But.
I think even as a preventative measure, right, it's really good to... I mean, you can't really mandate it, all right, but as a preventative measure, it's a good idea for people to either come and attend or listen to other people. Scratch that.
I think
it's not within our, you know.
But if, like Ms. Lyle said, if it qualifies as continuing education, it's just like we require 3 DEs in ethics. We can require 3 DEs in board meetings. I mean, I don't think it goes outside of that scope.
Yeah, and I think all over Arizona, so.
Well, disciplinary isn't always.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we take that into account, right? It's not, again, it's not standard, I think, but.
I think it's just something to think about. I mean, I've heard it multiple times, and at the end of the day, we can't add it and require it for somebody that's applying. We can't add it or require it for somebody that's renewing. But we can, as a board, you could make that be part of a consent agreement or make it part as a non-disciplinary consent agreement. And I think that it kind of begs that question, like when you do require somebody to take CEUs and 3 credit or 3 CEUs in behavioral health ethics, to me, sitting in a boardroom would be a lot more beneficial than doing an online behavioral health ethics that they could do in 10 minutes. But that's just what I see coming through the board. So I just, as Megan mentioned, it's not on the agenda for an action vote. It's really just something for the members to think about. I think there are times when each and every one of you are sitting there thinking, boy, I think they need to come to more board meetings. That might be that person. So it's not meant to be every single time, and it's just really meant to be educational and rehabilitatable, but I think it just to let you know that you do have the authority to require them to come to a meeting, and I think in some instances it would be way better than anything you could make them do online.
And I just wanted to add on the cost and transportation piece, since I joined this board years ago, I think we have done a fabulous job of looking at that specifically. What is the cost of the discipline that we are putting on each licensee? Because we can't look at this stuff in a vacuum, and these things, you know, people need to still be able to make a living if they want to keep practicing. So I think we've done a good job at that, and that, you know, that will be a consideration. For example, if someone's from, you know, the Kalamazoo, we're probably not going to require them to attend a bunch of in-person meetings. So.
Next is the update on the Counseling Regulatory Board Summit. As I mentioned, both Mr. Blatz and Ms. Kramer and I had the ability to attend the summit, and the summit is sponsored by MBCC and CCE, and which is it's a National Counseling Association, but the reality is anything that's discussed at the National Counseling Association is very beneficial to each and every one of our disciplines, whether you're a public member or licensed in a different discipline. This is something that I've been honored to be able to go to, I don't know, since 2014, and there's just not many times that I don't walk away taking back a lot of things. One thing that I consistently take back is just how well we do things here in Arizona. And I really mean that. I mean that as a team, you know, when it comes to my staff, to the board members, to our legal advice, to our committee. I always just like to feel like we're just a little bit one step ahead of them, even though we still have issues and even though we're still trying to make things a little bit better and streamline things better. It's always a nice takeaway. And at this time, I think the other thing I learned is pinky deals don't mean anything. But at this time, I'm going to go ahead and let Ms. Kramer share her feedback on being able to attend that conference.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, as a public member, the clinical piece is something that I totally rely on you all for. But, you know, when you've only ever been on this one board in Arizona, you don't know what you don't know. And so there were a couple of things that I think, for example, attendance at board meetings that, you know, I think we could, Mrs. Wells, right, we do things here as well as anyone is doing them anywhere, but there are still ways that we can improve that would help both the public and our licensees, and I think we've come back with some good ideas, and I look forward to implementing them.
Ditto, both of us. It's always a good experience. This was my second one, and for me, a big takeaway is the reassurance of the issues that are ongoing that we struggle with, so supervision and telehealth, and just hearing that other states have similar challenges, and so, you know, knowing that we're not alone and trying to troubleshoot and address those. There were some powerful presentations regarding substance abuse and substance use disorder and impaired professionals. There were some good takeaways about the national compact, so some really good information, and I think it'll lead to some good future agenda items for us. So appreciate the board approving us today.
And next is agenda item D, update on Southwestern School for Behavioral Health Studies Conference. So this, within a 24-hour period of coming back from Philadelphia, I traveled down to Tucson for 5 days for this conference. And I will have to say on the record, it is my all-time favorite conference because that's where our licensees are. There's hundreds of our licensees that represent the state of Arizona there. It's held every year in Tucson. They have a number of vendors that come and put up booths, and they have a multitude number of trainings and conferences or presentations that you can attend. So I actually participated, not in my own training, but in somebody else's training. They asked me to come in on Sunday to do a clinical supervision part of their clinical supervision training, which was just such an honor. It was just such an honor just to be able to be present, you know, and be available for our licensees. And then I also did a very large presentation to over 200 some people on Monday night in regards to just an overview of the board as well as a little bit of a touch on ethics and stuff. So, but the reason why I say truly that it's my favorite is this particular conference has allowed the booth for, I think, just the last two or three years based on my request, if we could have a booth there and represent the board, because it's expensive, but yet the board can't pay for something like that. Whether we have the money or not, it's not what we spend our money on. And for the last at least 3 years pre-COVID, they've allowed us to go in and put up a booth at no expense to the board. And it just makes you, it just makes the board available to ask questions. And Ms. DeBratz had her own booth there for her own her own business, but I think she can attest to the amount of people that came up to our table, or my table, or the board's table, to, you know, ask questions, but then some just walk by and say, thank you for being here. And that's so important, you know, and it's so important. It's something that we constantly have been working on. And I know when I left that day on Thursday, I'm pretty sure it was on Thursday, I said to Mr. Broads, which was just, this is my confirmation for doing what I do here for the board, because it's a reminder of why we're here. We're here to protect the public, and most of them are very, very supportive of that process. So it's always an honor to be able to be there.
We had several people that I think mentioned to both of us that it was nice to find out that the board is human. We are, so please come to meetings and see us. And but they were very appreciative just to see Ms. Zabala be available and able to present. I think a lot of people really appreciated that. So thank you for doing that for our state.
It's Big August. And next we have on the agenda a discussion regarding Dobbs versus Jackson, the Women's Health Organization. I just want to just briefly share, you know, I did upload something to the member portal just for your information. But just, you know, really want to just be clear, like, this is really not something that the board is able to really talk too much about. We definitely can't provide any legal advice in regards to it, not just now, maybe someday. Right now it's very fluid, but it's just really, as a regulatory board, as much as we want to always help our licensees and be available for them and answer questions, this is one where we're going to tell them directly to seek legal advice, because it's not going to be something that the board's going to give direction on. But since it was asked to be put on, I put on there. You know, the conversation will have to be limited, but if there's something that somebody would want to say in regards to that, that's why I put it on the agenda. Do you want to say anything? Okay.
Okay. And I appreciated you sending the article and just having the perspective that this is a struggle across the board out there. And
so that being said, were you done, Ms. Zabala? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Agenda item number 15, are there any future agenda items that anybody would like to see Ms. Zabala add for next month?
I would like to suggest that we talk about the possibility of maybe creating like a workflow for people applying for license. Something, you know, if yes, then this, if no, then that. Like a flow chart. Thank you.
Got that, Ms. Mark?
We could do some brainstorming on more ways to, and I don't know what the guidelines are, so please redirect me if I'm just off base here. You know, having more engagement with our licensees in the way that, you know, you guys did at the conference. Are there ways to get our faces out there and be real humans? You know,
and I also have the impaired professional program, which was requested by both Ms. Kramer and Mr. Bratz, but I just wasn't prepared to have a full conversation on that today. So my plan is to have it on for next month.
Thank you. Anything? All right. Agenda item number 16 is our call for public comment. So we cannot engage or give feedback or respond to questions, unfortunately, during this time. But if there's anybody from the public that would like to speak to the board and on record, you're more than welcome to come up and do so. Time would be limited to up to 5 minutes each. So if there's anybody who wishes to. Going once. Does it look like he might twice?
In the face, just giggling.
Okay. That's it then. Go on. Okay, three times. All right. So our next regular meeting is going to be Friday, September 9th. Ms. Vella, do we have confirmation so far?
We have confirmation from everybody. Ms. Knapp will be absent.
I'll be absent.
Mr. Charles, so if anybody else can't make it, if you can let Ms. Lavella know as soon as possible, just so we can ensure we have quorum. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll move, Trotter.
Is there a second? Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
Have a great weekend. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.